It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've put together a very special episode, brought the gang together. We're going to help you celebrate Boxing Day the day after Christmas with a Best of 2017 watch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 590 for Boxing Day, Tuesday, December 26th, 2017. The year's best. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToWebinar, a trusted webinar platform with over 55,000 customers who have hosted over 2.7 million interactive web events to connect with their audiences. And that's this year alone. For more, visit gotowebinar.com/podcast. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and winter solstice. We are not here right now. It's an imaginary Mac Break Weekly, except I'm joined by Renee Ritchie from Montreal. Merry Christmas, Renee.
I'm not here, Leo. I'm sitting on a throne of lies. I reek of meat and cheese, but I wanted to wish everybody a happy holidays anyway.
Yay. And Alex Lindsay, who is in Pittsburgh right now.
It looks a lot like the Twit studio.
He does amazing things with video. I don't know how he does it.
Special things. You
know. Andy Inako, who's sous-viding a turkey even as we speak.
I am trying to see if any of the fudge or cookies that my aunt sent me are do I have any of it left? Yeah. Probably not, but if so, that's my breakfast.
Nothing like fudge crumbs for breakfast. Good.
Box shaken.
So we actually recorded this ahead of time because what we did is as we mentioned all last few months, we were looking for best clips from the year, and we have some fun ones, and we thought it'd be fun to gather the gang together to introduce those clips. In fact, we begin in January, and remember, this was the 10th anniversary of Steve Jobs' original iPhone announcement, and I think we all had a good time reliving that fabulous memory. You can watch it right now. Yesterday was a day that will live in infamy. January 9th, 2007, the birth of this little doohickey here, the iPhone. You've got yours. Renee's reaching over to get his. I charged mine up, and what's amazing is it still works.
It's still so pretty,
isn't it? Andrew.
I'm sorry. I grabbed for another handheld device with rounded corners and a highlighted center button. This one came out 2 or 3 years before that.
That's too many buttons. So, too many buttons.
They're so easy to. Oh, there you go. That's the one.
All of us have this old phone collection lying around. I was disappointed.
I have mine somewhere. I don't know. I lost it in a move. It's in some box. There's some box that I didn't want to give it up.
I was disappointed neither. I mean, I guess we knew it was historic. I was disappointed because I had erased the contents. I was hoping to find, pictures from 2008.
Two megapixel pictures.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember, Alex, were you with me in the room when Steve made the announcement? I know Scott Bourne was. I think you were.
I think
you were sitting next to me.
Yeah, I think I was. Yeah.
Yeah. It was you on my left, Scott Bourne on my right. I don't remember if Merlin was there or not. The original Mac Break team. And Scott Bourne had been talking for 2 years on Mac Break Weekly about how he couldn't wait for the iPhone.
Didn't he throw his trio on the floor and stomp on it as soon as it was announced and then find out it was 6 months away?
Yes, I think he did. let me get the Steve Jobs iPhone announcement up here for you.
What a great! I rewatched it again yesterday. Just what an artist at the height of his powers.
This, I think, absolutely Steve at his absolute best. I'm not sure which will be.
Well, it's chiefly just.
Here we go.
James Brown.
Good God! Skip ahead a little bit to about a minute in on this. This is him just coming out on the stage. This is during Macworld Expo, so he's at the Moscone West, the giant auditorium there.
Throw in with us as 2006.
I think it's
1 minute in, a little bit back. There'll be a glowing apple. Oh, actually, no, more than 1 minute in on this. There'll be you were there. Go backwards. No, way back. You're way far ahead. I don't know, maybe not.
They're still using the same keynote template.
You go to in 7 months, but we didn't do this alone.
Okay, so.
I'm sorry. I thought you had it queued up.
We did this with lots and lots of lawyers. Mm. Lots of lawyers.
Lots and lots of lawyers. So pause for refreshment while I
I put the link in the show notes, Leo, the direct one.
Yeah. Thank you. There we go.
What I was going to say is that the real thing is, like, you could see that he has been dying to give this keynote for a year and a half, 2 years, and he's just excited as anything just to finally be able to show this thing off.
But there's a backstory, because we also know that this was a very unlikely to succeed demo, and the engineers were all sitting in the front rows with a bottle of liquor, and each time the engineer responsible for any part of the demo's section passed successfully, take a shot, and they ended up drunk.
Anything involving a radio was not good.
There were only a handful of working iPhones. He had two on stage in case the first one failed, and there was one exact and only path that Steve could take through the demo that would work. Anything else would guarantee to crash it. Here, let's watch. Because when you know that, Steve's presence and centeredness is remarkable given the risky territory he's about to enter.
Well, he knows he's not going to get fired.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. And Apple has been, well, first of all, one's very fortunate if you get to work on just one of these in your career. Apple's been very fortunate. It's been able to introduce a few of these into the world. In 1984, we introduced the Macintosh. It didn't just change Apple.
Let's skip ahead. Just
it changed
bit.
The whole computer industry.
Although it's coming up pretty quick. I'll let him continue through. It's fun to watch this. A master in his prime. He's not ill at this point, right? He's very
2001.
Thin. Yeah.
We introduced the first iPod. And it didn't just change the way we all listen to music. It changed the entire music industry.
Yeah, no, he looks healthy here.
Well, today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls.
Now, let me pause for a moment and ask you, Renee, you weren't in the audience. You were probably 12 years old when this happened.
No, it was right before I started, like 2 months before I started working at iWars.
Andy, you must have been, though, right? You were going to MacWorld.
I was there.
Yeah. So, Alex and Andy, we all thought there was going to be an iPhone, right? But there wasn't, but no confirmation. Of course, this is back when Apple really had the lid on things. So there was no sneaky rumor. Right.
Well, and I had this feeling when this part happened. I was like, oh no, we're not going to get the phone. No, like he was talking about an iPod. I was like, iPod,
widescreen iPod. Right.
It was a great. It was an incredible buildup.
In fact, the applause at that point is a little lukewarm.
Yeah, they're like, what?
We thought there would be a phone at this announcement, though, right, Andy? I mean, we're pretty sure there was.
Yeah, that was pretty much a lock. But they had a really good leash down on what the details of that device would be. And I don't think anybody was expecting anything like the iPhone. They were certainly expecting something much better than, you know, than something that looked like this, say. But no one had the forethought to say, no, it's going to be an all touchscreen thing. There's going to be only one mechanical button. There's an immense amount of excitement because everybody, it's not that, oh, well, maybe we'll finally get an update to the iMac this year, or maybe we'll get, you know, this is the one where we'll get the touch bar on the new MacBook. It's going to be, there's going to be a brand new product that we've absolutely never seen before, and nobody knows exactly what form it's going to take. There was an immense amount of excitement.
I think we thought that. I do. And I think Scott Bourne, as I remember, was saying, he called it the iPhone, but nobody knew even what the name was going to be. That just seemed like, you know, that was a placeholder. So I'll skip back just a second so you can hear the applause when he says,
the first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls.
There's some good cheering there, but I don't know.
This is when video was brand new on the iPod. So
right. Okay.
The second is a revolutionary mobile phone.
That's the cheering. Because now that confirms what we'd suspected. There's a phone. Well, but we're still puzzled. Go ahead, Renee.
If you think about it for a second, that very first slide took Apple's most successful, most profitable product of the day and deprecated it to an app in one sentence.
Isn't that amazing? That's a good point. Isn't that amazing?
And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device.
People a little more puzzled at this point. Like, huh?
But look at that now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, Renee, no one knew at the time whether this was going to be a success or not. I mean, Apple fans, we were all very excited and wanted it, but there was even Apple didn't know how big a success it was.
People thought it wouldn't be an success. One phone on one network for $600.
Right. Well, we didn't know that yet.
And the phone companies were telling us how complicated it was.
Go ahead.
The phone companies were like, all the phone companies that make phones, like, I don't think that Apple understands how complicated making phones is. They're gonna learn.
Yeah, I thought that. I thought, why would Apple want to get in this awful, horrific business?
So, three things: a widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator.
An iPod. Oh, now we start.
Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
And that was it. That was it, man. I'll never forget that moment. And I'm sure Scott Bourne was at that point leapt to his feet. So first, what is APFS? Apple File System.
Yeah, so it's Apple's new file system. It's, you know, we've been rumors about this for years. There was some talk of them adapting ZFS. Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of advantages to it, but that didn't work out for a variety of reasons.
ZFS is called a COW file system, which is, I think, copy on write is what it stands for. But the basic benefits of these, Apple's file system is 30 years old. HFS is 30 years old. The basic benefit of these newer file systems, Windows doesn't have it, Apple doesn't have it yet, but you could put it on, and even Linux, most of the time you don't use it. You might use a COW file system if you use BTRFS, or if you use ZFS, and some Linuxes let you do that, is it'll take snapshots. It's big on data integrity. It actually looks at every byte of data and does a hash on it to make sure that there's no change. So you can kind of guarantee that your data is intact on the hard drive. Yeah. It allows you to do great recovery stuff. It's for data integrity, it's fantastic.
There's cloning, like you said, snapshotting. There's just all sorts of really, really handy things that just make data integrity and data preservation higher priorities than they were on the original file systems.
And we need to kind of join the 21st century.
Yeah. Well,
also,
with
flash storage, size of drives. So every system has to be tricked to access a terabyte hard drive because the geometry is, they just have to lie to it. The controller says, yeah, I have 1,024 cylinders. Yeah, sure. So that's one problem. And now we have SSDs, and they really don't behave the same way as spinning drives. Encryption is built in. Yep. I mean, I guess we've had encryption, but even better encryption.
Right.
Metadata, so that if the power goes out, that's what copy on write does. If the power goes out during a write, doesn't matter. Better than journaling. This is like journaling plus. Directory sizing is fast. It's just a big improvement.
Yeah, yeah. But the underlying thing is that all this is stuff that you get for free by virtue of the fact that you're running this file system, as opposed to, okay, let's have clever engineers implement these features on top of the existing file system. It's really it's baked right in, and that means that not only is it going to be more reliable and also more accessible to more apps, but also if something, God forbid, does go wrong, it's easier to diagnose and fix. So this is just a big win from start to finish and long delayed.
It is designed for SSDs, so it kind of makes sense that you'd use it on iOS because all iOS devices are using SSDs.
Yeah. Also, iOS is a much more controlled environment, right. And so they could Apple has a better idea of how developers might screw things up by trying to be as clever as Apple's own engineers. So this is a really good way to let's start off in the shallow end of the pool before we implement it worldwide on the macOS.
It also
it's easier to see target.
It supports trim natively and. Does it all the time. So when you delete a file or you reclaim free space, it trims immediately, which speeds up the SSD considerably.
And there's all sorts of theoretical advantages, even on iOS, where things like, you know, backups, the way backups are handled, the way cloud backups are handled, you can do incremental backups. I mean, there's significant advantages to switching to this file system, even on something like the Apple Watch, which is why I think they're going from their smallest device all the way up to their biggest.
So they told us at WWDC that this was coming.
Yes.
I'm surprised it's coming. I just really didn't think that.
Always coming, but never quite arriving.
Yeah, I just thought it was going to be another one of those, you know, promises. And it's not Apple. I mean, every company's done this, you know. Apple teased us with ZFS a couple of years ago. Maybe Apple did.
Or storage was another tease.
Yeah. So it's better for bigger drives. You got snapshots, which is really valuable. Backups, much more efficient. Here's this kind of interesting one. Space sharing allows multiple file systems to share the same underlying free space in a physical volume, which I guess would only be valuable if you're using a virtual machine or I don't know exactly how that would be used. This is really really great. I'm just thrilled to see this
cache
coming.
Cache protection, sparse files.
So you did it. Safe. Is your phone okay?
Yeah, phone is fine. I mean, like, I feel like Yulia, like, you know, we have to take the punch first just in case, because you can warn people if there's a problem or you can reassure them if there's not.
Yeah. Well.
But yeah, it's working fine.
Well, in this case, I'm not doing it because you're taking the punch.
Yes.
So you're taking the punch for me, too.
And again, like, this is a way more targeted, way more controlled, way fewer variable environment to test it on than something like a Mac, where people can do all sorts of things
when
like
they,
extension.
When they announced this, they had all these, you know, big, like, warnings at WWDC, because developers have been able to, you know, provisionally do this on their Macs since June, that, you know, all sorts of, you know, don't do this, don't do that, make sure you back up, it won't work with this, doesn't work with the Apple file, you know, the AFP. So, and they said 2017 as a bootable file system on the macOS. Does the new macOS beta have it?
I can't tell it's not in the notes, and I wasn't able to install it because I'm using it right.
It would be in the. They would make a deal out of it if it did. I would.
Yeah,
guess.
I think you'd see warnings all over the place.
Yeah, like this is going to be horrible.
And I would actually prefer them to test it on something like before they roll it out.
At WWDC, they promised non-destructive upgrades from HFS Plus to APFS for all boot volumes when it ships.
Yeah.
So if you want to go back, you have to reformat the hard drive, which will erase all your data.
But this is like the kind of cool thing that we've been talking about for years, in that there is no obvious next. Like Apple... Apple can't get stuck again because there's no magical operating system in Founder to go and get back. They have to move their technology stack forward. And even though they're keeping OS X and iOS very different, sorry, macOS and iOS very different on the interface level, there's a whole swath of technology that both of them already share, and they can make that technology better. So whether it's Swift or it's Apple File System, they can work on these giant projects and roll them out at a multi-platform scale. And really start to, because HFS Plus, like you said, Leo, it was like the MacGyver level of gum and toothpicks holding it together. And this really helps them push forward again for another decade.
One thing missing that's in ZFS is kind of native low-level RAID capabilities. It's one of the reasons I love ZFS is you can easily add a volume and turn on RAID. Apple says there's no file RAID built into APFS, but you can use Apple's own RAID with it. So that's just something that's a little different from ZFS. Yeah. This is all really good news and something to look forward to. But so let us know how it goes.
Yes, I mean, early days, right?
good luck to you. And I hope you and the
children
are fine.
Check to see if my
fine.
Photos are all backwards.
Yeah, really. You know, who knows what's going to happen. So big news, Apple has updated the Mac Pro.
ish.
So what did they...
Reset the counter.
Yeah, they reset the counter. What did they do to the Mac Pro?
Can you reset the counter? I mean, they're giving you what were the upgrades essentially at the base level price now. So it's not like they didn't put the latest Xeons in. They didn't put the latest GPUs in. It's just the higher end versions.
But they at least updated... I mean, it's still the trash can. We're not saying that anything about that. But they at least updated the graphics card. But you're saying it's not the latest stuff yet.
I have to double check it, but it looks to me like what you could previously get as upgrades. It's like the number of cores went up, but I don't think they're using, like, they're not using anything approaching what AMD is shipping now. And I think that's, they mentioned this in the, well, Gruber mentioned this in the article, is that they sort of got trapped by their own thermal core, and that machine requires the triple balance of a CPU and two GPUs. And they were betting heavily that the two GPU model would take off, the general computing would take off, that things like OpenCL would take off, and turns out not so much. And you can't just throw a giant, like, NVIDIA 1080 card in here because it would destroy the thermal balance in the machine. So they went the wrong direction, and it's going to take them a while to recover. So this is sort of the highest end they can put in the current casing for the same base price now.
So basically what they did is they dropped the price $1,000 on the high-end, highest end model.
That's a new style of upgrade. It's just like, hey, we gave you the same thing for less.
The $3,999 model. Yeah. With the 8-core BTO and the dual D700 GPUs is the high-end stock configuration, and the former high-end model with the 6 cores E5 Xeon and the dual D500s and 16 gigs of RAM is now the base model, $2,999. So you can go as high as 8-core E5, but as you point out, Renee, that's still the E5. That's the processor that shipped 3 years ago with the original Mac Pro, the D700. I don't think the processor is such a big deal for people. Honestly, I mean, I think it's the GPUs. You know, the 3-year-old GPUs are ancient history.
And also, if you're talking about a Pro platform, you know, really, and AMD. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of us that don't really consider AMD a Pro platform. I mean, they do have some Pro cards, but NVIDIA really owns that market.
There's just a lot of different definitions of what constitutes a pro user. And I think where a lot of people are being left behind is the point in which you're buying a box where you're expecting that you'll be able to make it faster where you need to make it faster. So you can't just plop another GPU where you need it. You can't just plop a CPU upgrade where you need it. You really have to upgrade it the way that Apple was planning for you to upgrade this, the Quaker Oats box style Mac Pro. And this was just not a machine that was designed to do that. So, like I said, one of the money quotes from Craig Federighi was, "We boxed ourselves in with a round design."
It's that's funny, but thank you, Phil Schiller, for innovating his ass off.
Some people have long memories. Like
I have a long memory because I bought one.
Of the five people who were at that table, two of them decided to say, turns out that can't innovate my ass turned out to be exactly correct.
Really? Oh, that's funny. So this was unprecedented, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. But when Apple announced the new Mac Pro, I think they knew immediately that there would be howls of pain and that the immediate conclusion we and everybody else would jump to is that's it. Apple's done with the Macintosh. Look at this. This is their idea of a pro update. So in an unprecedented, unprecedented move, they had a journalists come to Cupertino and had a roundtable where they explained to them why this is the best they could do right now.
Yeah, they really did outline why some of the reasons why you didn't see that many updates, because like Renee said, it's a triangle inside there with different subsystems on each side of that triangle, vertical triangle, and the idea is that each one of these sides of the triangle, as this computer was engineered, has to be generating about the same amount of heat as the others. So it's not wasn't going to be as easy as if the weakness is the GPUs. If they guessed that The secret to greater performance is going to be distributed processing across multiple GPUs, when it turns out that the direction that everyone was going since 2013 was one big beefy CPU, a GPU that keeps getting updated. And so they couldn't plop in one big beefy GPU because now one side of the triangle is hot enough to fry three eggs on, and the other two, with all the passive passive thermal stuff, can't really get colder in order to compensate for it. So they were absolutely stuck.
Thank you, Apple.
Thermal corner.
Thank you. A mere $3,000 and 3 years later. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. This is why I've always been hoping that Apple would be more open.
This is right. Well, they had to. There was no choice at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was no reason for anybody to assume that Apple has or had faith in the Macintosh if they're not updating the Mac Pro for substantially in 3 years. They come up with a new no updates to the iMacs, no real updates to the Mac Mini, update to the MacBook Pro that makes it more like a MacBook Air than a conventional MacBook Pro. Unless you in that vacuum, people are going to make whatever decisions that then speculations that they have to, and silence is not an answer. As a, like the line from The Simpsons, we tried doing nothing and that hasn't worked. So you have to say that, okay, here is exactly why you haven't seen any updates, and it has nothing to do with how we feel about the Macintosh, just because, again, we put ourselves into a corner with this design.
Well, you know, if also you want to judge how this new briefing strategy worked, you need to go no farther than the Fox News of Cupertino, Daring Fireball, which
okay, that's very, very low.
No, I think it's exactly right. I hate to tell you, but
no. I challenge that. There were I read all five. First of all, Gruber was the only one to specify here are the names of the other people who are at that table, and also linking to all of them, so it was easy for someone to click all the links and read all the different coverage.
Yeah,
there are two or three.
Here's very, very his good. Lead. Let's not beat around the bush. I have great news to share.
Well, that is good news.
Yeah, well, okay. I guess it is good news. He buries the part about, but this is going to be, you know, another year or so.
It's like comparing anybody to Delta Airlines. I have to say, okay, stop.
All right, that's
back
mean.
Up.
All right, okay, it was mean. I admit, it was a cheap shot.
No, for me, his was the easiest to follow. A lot of them had very small articles or short articles that they were broken up a lot, and I find them really hard to follow. John's, to me at least, was very well organized and narrated, and it sort of put you at, not exactly at the table with them, but in the table-ish.
So who was at this table? Who were the five people at the table?
John Paz from BuzzFeed.
TechCrunch was there.
Yeah, TechCrunch, Matt Panzerino.
TechCrunch, BuzzFeed.
And Lance Olmert from Mashable.
Okay. Interesting group.
And also, again, that's why that's a big part of this of the story, to find out who else was at that table.
Yeah.
Given that all of these people weren't, you don't have the New York Times, you don't have the Wall Street Journal. These are clearly people, particularly Gruber and TechCrunch. These are sites that are really well positioned to talk directly to developers, directly to pro users. So clearly, Apple wanted a certain segment of the Mac community to hear about this. This wasn't a stock price saving face. This wasn't a part of the marketing push for the Mac. This was. So it really adds credibility to the idea that we really want to try to say that anybody who is thinking of switching away from the Mac specifically because they don't think that we're supporting pro Mac users, at least give us another year or so to come through on this promise we've made.
I think it's really.
I think the griddle is getting pretty hot for Apple. I think that the issue is I have never heard, not just me, I've never heard so many pro computer users talking about moving to a PC and trying to figure out how they're going to do that and trying to figure out what that's going to look like. I mean, to have that many people concerned about moving, I mean, this is a core audience, and if you don't think that it affects Apple's overall brand. Look at when they switched to Final Cut and Conan O'Brien's edit crew, you know, in protest made fun of a Final Cut, you know, and that definitely affects the overall brand for the core audience who is deeply tied into the entertainment industry to be, you know, jumping ship.
Ina Fried now works for Apple. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I think it's also pretty clear that Apple did not want to have to do this. Like, this was not like in their plans. My guess is they started working on these a while ago, and which was kind of funny because last year there were articles about Apple abandoning the Mac. But they've been working on this new MacBook Pro and the new Pro upgrades to the iMac for a while. And if I had to guess, I'm thinking that these are not delayed, but they're not going to be ready anywhere nearly as quickly as Apple hoped. And that sort of fed into this situation because if they could have announced this spring the new Mac Pro, the new modular Mac Pro, then a lot of these problems, they don't go away, but they don't have to have meetings like this one to sort of say, don't worry. we have new Mac Pros on the way. It's more like, boom, here's a new Mac Pro. We know you've been waiting a while, but we think it's worth it. And when you start to find out that it's not going to be ready for a variety of reasons until next year, you got to decide, are you going to keep quiet and risk exactly what Alex is talking about? People not just discussing switching to Windows, but actually switching to Windows. Or are you going to step up and say, look, you know, we don't usually discuss future plans, but we have them, and, you know, we're not abandoning the Mac, and try to do as much damage control and perception work as you can.
And also they have to be careful of not rushing it either, because then you end up with the Mac Pro, which is a lot of pro users, you know, were like myself, were pretty upset with. I mean, they took, you know, we don't want a whole bunch of USB-Cs. You know, there are things that this makes a whole lot more complicated. And if you're, you know, if you want a fast laptop and you're a business user, it's probably great. But for pro users, it's not necessary. For a large number of them, it wasn't great, you know. So I think it was a mixture of a false start on the laptop, along with no updates on the hardware on the desktop, created a situation where they had to respond.
So yeah, I apologize, because I really didn't do this very well. Let me give you the news, because we're analyzing it, and I don't think I really coherently stated the news. The news is, and I'll do it in Gruber's order, everybody really led with the fact that Apple is going to rethink the Mac Pro and come up with a new design. It sounds suspiciously like the cheese grater, a modular design that will allow upgrades to the CPUs and the GPUs and other hardware on a regular basis. The bad news is the existing Mac Pros get a kind of a non-update, a minor update, including no USB-C, no Thunderbolt 3 relay, really no change at all to the Mac Pro form factor, and it still won't support the 5K display. The other bad news is these new Mac Pros won't be out for some reason until next year. They are going to ship new iMacs later this year with Pro configurations, but the iMac isn't upgradable either.
It's the reason Alex said they want to get them right, and getting them right now is not as important to them as getting them right at this point.
Yeah, wait a minute, though, really. How come it takes that long?
Well, because I think that they were going one direction and realized that one direction might have
been the wrong direction. If you started today, it would take you to next year to come up with a redesigned Mac Pro?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I would say so. Because
you know,
they're not
talking about mass production of hardware. I mean, and then refitting a factory, and then, you know, built. I mean, they built a whole factory around this round trash can, and so now you know having something else that they're going to have to actually produce. Yeah. And by the way, I would have been totally happy if they had left the cheese grater in place.
Yeah, I'm gonna call BS on all of this. Because first of all, it took them 3 years to figure out they couldn't upgrade the Mac Pro, and they only decided in the spring of 2017. Oh shoot. We realize we can't upgrade this thing. We better work on a different model. It took them that long. I call BS. I don't buy any of this. I don't think this is going to happen.
They were pretty candid about
that. This is trying to
keep
those people that Alex is talking about, who are about to leave the fold, in suspended animation for another year.
But that only pushes off the inevitable another year if they don't come up with something. And I think the opportunity for Apple, if they really want to hear the pro users, they're going to give us something that is rack mountable, that is modular, that allows us to swap out just about every component, you know, there, but do it in an Apple way, which is that when it's rack mounted, it looks great. When you slide things in and out, it's not a bunch of little wires that you're all doing a whole bunch of crazy stuff with. You're just actually sliding things in and out. You know, those are all the opportunities that Apple has to show their design skill, is not to ignore what works for professionals. It is to find a way to make that experience elegant.
You don't think that there's a significant rinse? This is vaporware, and Apple's just trying to keep you from switching to Windows for another year, and then they're going to say, you know what, we figured out, it's the iPad Pro that you really want.
No, but the problem is that much for pros, they don't want that. And if they did that, all they're going to end up with, maybe it's pushing it out another year, but if they did that, what you'd end up with is just a bunch of people, because there's just a bunch of people not buying a lot of computers, and they're going to make a decision in another year, maybe.
Well, I agree. You're kicking the can down, and in a year you're going to have even more angrier people if you don't come up with something. So
yeah, I just think that would be an insane thing to do on Apple's side. I don't think they're insane.
I think an insane thing to do is to make a new Mac Pro and not update it for 3 years, and then and 3 years later say, "Whoops, we can't make it. This can't upgrade this, so we're going to start over." That's insane. That'll make it 4 years.
I think Renee was about to say what I'm about to say. So why don't I let Renee say what I think you were about
let
to
Renee
say.
Let Renee say it then. All right.
Well, there's a couple of things. So maybe I'll hit on one of them. But one is, like I think Federighi spoke to this, where he said that it was a mixture of them trying to fix it, not getting it right. And I'll go as far as to say denial. And I think he might have used that word, too, where they're trying to fix the Mac Pro that they have to see what they can do with it. And then they have other priorities. And it's like any human thing. Apple's a remarkably human company. You can distract, oh, I've got to get that basement, that deck set done. You know, I've got to get the, but look, I have to fix this car. And you're very good at ignoring problems, but that does not make them go away. And I think that they tried to ignore and a little bit fix this, but they had iMacs, and they can say, iMacs sell better. We'll focus on those. And yeah, we'll get back to fixing the Mac Pro. And oh, look, we got to get the iPhone out. And yeah, we'll get to the Mac Pro. And that just, it becomes years and years, and the pressure and the problem builds and builds. And at a certain point, I think probably a year or so ago, they realized that, you know, that was just going no further, and they started working on something new.
How long does it take Windows manufacturers to
make? So it's not long just that, is that So, Leo, it's not just that. It's that they have to get the new iMac out, the new display out, the new iPhone out, the new iPad out. The iPad didn't ship yet. The iPad Pro update didn't ship yet. And they have to get the Mac Pro out. So they're building this in amongst the turbulence of getting all those other things shipped.
It's unprecedented. Unprecedented for Apple to communicate like this. I do want to commend them for at least communicating.
Yeah,
what's also unprecedented is for them to make such a huge – this is a huge admission of failure and mismanagement. Have you seen this? This is a great new YouTube channel, the unofficial Apple hard drive subtitled God Help My Hard – I mean, unofficial Apple archive, God Help My Hard Drive. It is loaded, if you're an Apple fan, as I'm sure you all are, with old Apple ads, videos. This is really a treasure trove.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs talking about the Blue Box story, Apple's Power Mac commercial. Which one should we, there's so many good ones here. I don't know where to start. Do you have a favorite you'd like to see again?
Here's to the crazy ones.
Oh, yeah. That would be fun to see again. Let me see if that's here. You want to watch it? Oh, you know what? This is the best. So there's a Richard Dreyfuss version, which is the one that aired on TV. But famously, Steve Jobs went into the voice booth to record it originally. So this is Here's to the Crazy Ones with Mr. Jobs doing the narration.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. While some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius.
Yeah. This is all a great mission statement.
Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
It's hard not to get chills when you see that, right?
Yeah, that's just again a brilliant mission statement, and one that I hope that we keep seeing over and over again. If you do a get info on the text edit and look at the sample document.
Yeah.
The text of that, the opening text of that is actually part of the icon. That's how important is or was.
Yeah, unfortunately, every Apple video site was were still up. It's actually went down almost immediately after we talked about it.
Killed it.
Yeah. It's gone.
That's why if you love an app, you run Downy and you download that yes. YouTube video.
Get it quickly. Yeah. Coming up, lots more. But before we do that, I want to thank our sponsor. We had a last minute addition to the show and we're thrilled. Folks at GoToWebinar said, hey, we'd like to support Mac Break Weekly.
Hey.
We love GoToWebinar. I've used it. I've given webinars. I gave a webinar on protecting your teenager online, things like that. What's great about GoToWebinar is you can do these live. And you can have from 1 to 6 presenters. You can see their faces, but you can also see their screens or an app or, you know, a presentation, whatever. But then you can have kind of an unlimited number of people watch. Typically, you're going to have hundreds, maybe thousands watched initially. But the webinar is recorded, and then it's got a long life. So this is great for company training, for a presentation you would be giving over and over again. The recorded ones are just as interactive as the originals because you can create up to 20 polls per webinar with up to 20 questions per poll. And you can do those ahead of time, and you probably should make some just because it engages the audience. It gives you some idea about them. You can use it to generate leads, things like that. But you can also use the polls in real time as you're giving a presentation. If you're thinking maybe this is too complicated, do people want to know more, you can throw a poll up really quickly and easily. And easy is the primary word with GoToWebinar. It's easy to start a webinar. They have custom email invitations. You can automatically request confirmations so you know who's showing. Reminders too, because even after people say yes, often they forget, so you want to remind them. They have automated email templates that make the whole thing a snap, and you can do that on your phone. It's completely mobile friendly, iOS and Android. Schedule a webinar, edit a session, but most importantly, track your performance. And I love the analytics in GoToWebinar. You can always find out, you know, a click away from qualified leads or metrics and feedback that helps you make the webinar better next time around. It's all encrypted, 128-bit AES end-to-end, point-to-point, which is fabulous. Let's see. Number one in customer satisfaction. Do I need to go on? Let me just tell you where to go. Turn your next presentation into a conversation with GoToWebinar. For more information, visit GoToWebinar.com/podcast. That's GoToWebinar.com/podcast. We thank GoToWebinar for adding a little holiday cheer to our end-of-year episode. Let's go on. This was a hack. Remember this when a hacker group named the Turkish Crime Family.
Yes.
claimed that they had access to a whole bunch of iCloud accounts, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and they wanted money to not turn them over.
And what did Apple say?
Here's some Turkish delights. Call it a day. They're sweet.
Yeah, see ya. They had access to some third party something. Yeah.
It didn't, in fact, Apple didn't, I don't think, as far as we know, it didn't even talk to them. They just ignored it and nothing bad happened, right? Here's the story. The Turkish Crime Family, the best hacker group name in the world. They're probably from North London, which means they're from England. They're not a family.
Oi! Really. Hey, I'm the Turkish crime family.
No, I'm
go
sorry.
Go get your computers, what?
I always end up doing my Dick Van Dyke.
On the side.
Mary Poppins. Anyway, so April 7th, they said they had more than half a billion now. They went up to like 637 million iCloud accounts. And they said, if you don't pay us, we're going to wipe phones and wipe Macs. And I haven't heard any word about wiped phones and wiped Macs. And so the question is, was this all BS? Or did Apple pay? The Turkish crime family said Apple paid. They told SC Magazine in the UK that they got a Bitcoin payment of $400,000. It was something was paid, and it was 401 Bitcoin early in the evening of April 7th. It was from an obfuscated Bitcoin ID.
Wasn't Tim. We have no proof that it was Tim.
We have no proof it was Tim or Apple, but... Wow, that's kind of interesting. It sounds like maybe Apple, after downplaying this all, actually paid the Turkish crime family, which would not be a good
precedent.
Would
you pay because, like, you pay them and then they're just going to release it? Like, you have no
terrible precedent. Terrible precedent.
Apple stuck their neck out saying that we're not going to, you know, this is not how we do business.
Right.
So they would have had the ability to just on the schneid saying, you know what, we checked one of the sofas in one of the lounges, we found $630,000, so we paid the $400,000 and bought pizza for everybody. We can consider the case closed. But again, once you go and say that we're definitely not going to do that, yeah, you better not do that.
Yeah. So a number of people pointed out. Well, one, you know, if you really wanted to prove you could do it. What do they do in James Bond movies, right? If you, as a supervillain, want to prove that you could blow up the world, you do a little demo. They could have wiped a phone or two, right? And said,
oh,
look,
so what
see?
Happens
right.
is, coincidentally, the Turkish crime family is throwing a big party that night. Tim Cook puts on a tuxedo, and they rent a car, and they make a fake identity. And he gets an invitation to that party.
No,
and then
Mr.
he goes,
Cook.
Ah, this is Tim, shaken, not stirred. Yeah, and he infiltrates it, and Johnny does some kung fu and gets the list, and that's how it works, right?
So a Turkish crime family spokesman told SC Magazine the funds might take a while to transfer. No funds had appeared in the wallet that they proposed. However, they did post a payment of 401.731 bitcoins in the early evening of April 7th. So... Where did that come from? Did Apple pay the
politicians?
Ransom?
Politicians terrified politicians. That they were going to actually release the stuff.
Maybe. I don't. You
Everything
know.
We wanted to ban turns out we did it, and it's in iCloud, and we're terrified now.
Great article by Troy Hunt, who is a Microsoft regional director and MVP. Here's where the Apple account hackers are threat. Here's where the Apple accounts that hackers are threatened. What came from? And, you know, he's talking about the dump that Zach Whitaker and ZDNet got of sample data and going through. It's actually really fun to read how this did. By the way, the top 10 passwords in this data, number one, Football 95 with 2,345
Oh, damn it, I'm accounts. Vulnerable.
Disney 1. And 800 was 1,270 accounts. Blank was 841 accounts. I love people and their passwords. 123456 was 773 accounts. You know, yep. These people could be wiped. I mean, really, if your password is 1111
69 did not rank as high as I thought it was.
344 people had the word password as their password.
Yep.
It said type password, Leo. It said type password.
One of the best ways to get somebody to choose a better password is just to simply email them or text them a link to that doc that says, here is in 2017, here's what the 100 most common passwords as reported by system administrators were. And you don't have to shame them, but say if your password is on this list, realize that you're not. If I have this access to this list and you have access to this list, the bad people also have access to this list. Yeah.
It's really funny. When I was setting up my iPhone after updating, I wiped an iPhone and set it up as new, and it asked me for a PIN code, and I was in a rush just to get screenshots. So I just typed in 1111. It goes, I'm sorry, that's a commonly used PIN code. I'm like, I just need to take screenshots. 2222. Sorry, that's a commonly used. And it started to become a stressful situation for me to find something
I'm
that I could just
to lose
use for screenshots.
For you,
but
Renee.
Yes. So, well, no, it's not going to stay that way. I just had to document the.
No, no. I'm saying that's what the phone says. I think that you need a timeout.
I'll let you.
I'll
let you read Troy's article and follow his logic. But the conclusion is, he says it seems most likely the list of Apple accounts isn't in fact hundreds of millions. It's instead less than 53,000. And he has good logic behind this, and it's predominantly compromised Evony accounts and a small handful full of others. But so that's interesting. You know, once you put it through through his funnel, you know. It's a much smaller number. Nevertheless, I mean, even if it were 53,000 people, Apple would, I think, be concerned about this. I don't know. Anyway, there's the Turkish crime family, by the way. Good looking fella. Probably not the Turkish crime family, I should point out. There you go. That's a much better. that's a much better Turkish crime. We're looking at their Twitter profiles.
Apple had to invite four or five handpicked journalists to the campus so that they could hat in hand explain, yeah, you know how we introduced that Mac Pro about being so awesome? Maybe we screwed up on that one. We're sorry about that. And so they made a really, really big attempt to adjust that on the WWDC keynote by talking about brand new Pro Macs and upgrades to old ones. Now, the ones that we're already familiar with, the iMacs and the MacBook Pros, they all got the expected 7th generation KB-like processors, some upgrades to GPU, some upgrades to disk speeds. But obviously, the centerpiece, the whole thing, was a brand new black or space gray, black enough in my office. After with my lighting, it'll be black enough. The iMac Pro with a 27-inch 5K display, up to 18 cores of Xeon CPUs, Radeon Vega graphics, up to 11 teraflops. The CPU processor up to 22 teraflops, 128 gigs of RAM. Now, this was the one audible gasp for some reason in the audience that 120 gigabytes of RAM. I think even the speaker was kind of hit back by that, as well as, I think, 4 terabytes of internal graphics. I think they made a – when they showed you the cutaway, they also made a big point of saying – we decided that maybe fans are a good idea, like having some fans, some sort of a active cooling system, so that, I don't know, 3 years later, we'd have to apologize to people because we couldn't put more more powerful processors because our passive cooling system could not handle it. $5,000 in its base configuration is going to be available in December. This was a preview, and the kids seem to like it. I was on Facebook. A good friend of mine is a colorist for DC Comics, which means that she does nothing but essentially rig light and color every single page of every single of all the comics that she does. And she said, I asked for her permission to use this quote, "Why does the word teraflops make me so tingly?" So this is this is definitely very much up her alley. This did seem like a new wave of respect for the Mac. Oliver, like, given who's buying one? I'm going to put it to you first, because You have probably the biggest excuse to buy one, given what your company makes. And can you buy two and hire me as a consultant and let me borrow it for a year?
Yeah, let's talk about that offline.
We'll talk.
Oh. Andy stole my idea.
Of course, we're gonna get one, or maybe one more, and. I'm looking forward to see how well it actually performs. So recently I did a live stream in Berlin, and the room was very hot. So I used one of the newer MacBook Pros, and it has this logic built in that, you know, reduces the processor power if it's in danger of overheating or something like that. And if you do a live stream, that happens quite fast. So after about 10 minutes or so, suddenly the MacBook Pro doesn't have 3.4 gigahertz anymore. It just tunes down the processor to 1 gigahertz. And then that kind of made me a little bit, that experience made me a little bit cautious about, you know, small, you know, thin Pro machines. So Apple acknowledging on the stage that there is a cooling issue, and they have, and they claim they have solved it with the iMac Pro. I'm a little bit cautious about that. Other than that, the machine specs really, really sound exciting. I mean, it's the dark gray itself. It's gonna be giving you 20% more performance.
Yes, because of course it's absorbing light and therefore getting more energy from the solar flares and such, I suppose. Although I can't imagine it being much more powerful than this. They kept underscoring about how, well, this is going to be great for like VR content creation. All these GPUs is going to be great for machine learning. Most of machine learning development is being done on GPUs these days. So I don't think this is going to be, this will probably be a little bit overkill for like watching Hulu, but it will probably do a great job watching Hulu, especially the 4K stuff. And of course I can't drop $5,000 on this. My car is not worth $5,000. But that's
the entry level configuration.
Exactly.
Who wants that?
Yeah.
You want 18 cores, and
you can
safely assume that you can multiply the, you know, what's the base configuration? 6 cores. So 18 cores, yeah, is going to be 3 times that much. And then you don't want 128. You know, you want the 3 terabytes SSD.
Is it going to be like buying it?
Take you way past $20,000. So it's like,
it's going to be like buying a BMW where it's like, oh, you got a BMW? Oh, you got the 320 model. Okay. That's, hey, it's still a BMW. I'm different. I needed the M5, but hey, good for you.
It's good that you mentioned that, because I think Apple really borrows from the German car makers, where, you know, you buy a BMW and it comes without the steering wheel. You have to buy a steering wheel extra. So
that's a different trim package.
Yes.
The most famous thing from the keynote, of course, is the HomePod. Apple ended with it. I thought that we'd start with it because I don't think anybody wants the keynote to end with the most exciting and interesting thing. So the HomePod is what the Coneheads used to refer to as their house, but it's also their intelligent, smart, awesome speaker. We were all anticipating something like a Siri speaker, like Google Home or like the Amazon Echo. But this, what they gave us is they're really, really hammering home the point that this is redefining home audio. This is a totally new home audio component. Oh my God, the home audio. So it has a custom, really huge custom woofer that has been designed by Apple. It's got 7 tweeters all around it, and also an A8 processor, which is the same CPU that's in the Apple TV and older phones. So there's a lot of processing power in it, and it's not being used necessarily for Siri, according to the demo that they gave. The big upshot of this is that it will, I assume, using the tweeters as a form of sonar with all the array of microphones to figure out where the speaker is in the room, figure out, okay, I'm actually at the back of a room next to a wall and there are 2 walls equidistant from my left and my right. Great. So I'm going to shape the sound so that it doesn't matter that I've been placed in a somewhat awkward location. There was also a long bit where they're trying to explain that not only that, but the CPU is actually also going to it sounded as though it was going to tear apart the audio that you're playing and sort of remix it. It'll find out, okay, here's the vocalist. We will put the vocalist here. And because it's a big ceiling, we're going to have to really boost the vocal track here. Here are the drums. Here's some really deep bass. We're going to have to mute that, but also increase the dimension of it. The idea being that you're spending $350 or roughly 3 times the cost of a Google Home, but you're getting a really, really, really super awesome speaker. And I wasn't thrilled about the price of it myself, because once again, what I love about my smart speakers is that it's not so – I don't really buy it to have a really awesome home audio experience. I buy it so that I'm in my bedroom and I can turn my lights off without getting out of bed. And then when I go downstairs to the kitchen, I can listen to music while I'm washing the dishes and set a timer for something. I would much rather have the 3 Google Homes or the 3 Amazon Echo or the 2 Amazon Echoes than the 1 really immense, really wonderful speaker, no matter how great it sounds.
Why don't you just buy a clapper?
I could borrow one from my aunt. She probably still has one. the other stuff to know is that it's not compatible with Bluetooth. It is compatible with AirPlay 2, so it will technically work with any streaming service that you can stream off of your AirPlay compatible device. But it will only directly access Apple Music without some sort of intermediary, which is I suppose is necessary, but. I would have loved to at least had Bluetooth as an option. I guess I'm not even going to have like a headphone jack I can plug my tape player into. So Kelly,
that's Apple's now, you know, Andy, is yeah. They don't put in headphone jacks anymore. That's not a thing now.
Silly me. I should be happy that there are even speakers in this thing. Yes.
Well, I thought the speaker was really interesting, but what I wanted from Apple, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, but what I wanted from Apple was a Siri speaker the way I can have an Amazon speaker or a Google speaker, which is to say the point of it is not that it's a speaker. Like, I don't feel like Apple's going up against the Echo unit or the Google Home unit with this device. I feel like they're going up against stuff like Sonos, and I think there's a Bose system that works kind of the same way, but I think they're going up against those sorts of things. I don't think they're going up there. It doesn't seem like they're gunning for the assistant, because it's like they built this amazing speaker that happens to have Siri. It was like Siri was almost the afterthought when they talked about it. They were like, look at all this amazing stuff. And Siri will answer you. But look at all this stuff it does.
Did they announce anything about HomeKit being available with or working with this speaker?
Yeah, they did. They did announce some updates to HomeKit, like including wireless speakers into AirPlay 2 is part of HomeKit. Part of AirPlay 2 is support for wireless speakers. So perhaps you could have. They didn't mention anything about the Sonos compatibility, but there's still a lot that can happen between now and September. Theory, perhaps you could have Siri working across, because HomeKit is all tied up into the same Rice Krispies treat.
So maybe one of the things that is hidden inside the speaker is like the being the hub for the home kit stuff, being able to talk to HomeKit devices. I think the built-in processor is maybe an indication of that. So that it's like a mesh network of you can put a speaker in every room, and then the speaker will talk to the HomeKit devices that you have. I don't know if it works that way, but I would assume that that is sort of like the idea.
My problem with it was I have awesome speakers. I already have awesome speakers. There's these two guys, Bowers and Wilkins, and they make fantastic speakers, and I have a bunch of them in my house, and we spent a lot of time and a lot of research, and we set them up, and they're amazing. And I have a receiver on the two levels where I have Sirius speakers. I have a receiver that does AirPlay, and so I AirPlay to those speakers when I want to hear stuff out of those speakers. So having the...
I see that Janie really, really agrees with you. Just woo!
Having the awesome speakers wasn't the part of that I wanted. Like, because we had this conversation in my house like a year ago now. Hey, Best Buy has the Amazon unit on sale, the Echo unit. And then Mr. Kelly said, okay, so when is Apple going to come out with one of these? And I said, I don't know if they're ever going to. And the rumors that we're hearing don't really say anything that would lead me to believe that. And then he said, okay, I guess we'll get one and see if we like it, because they still have like a 30-day return policy at Best Buy. So he brought it home and it's still here. And I have no interest in the new one. He has no interest in the new one because we already have great sound systems set up wherever we wanted a great sound system. Yeah. So for people who are maybe getting into this, there may be a market for it, but I don't see it.
Part of me that the bothered me about watching the keynote was you saw all this amazing stuff where he's talking about like AR and updates to Metal and talking about all this futuristic awesome stuff. And then at the end, he's like, we've saved our most important announcement and we're talking about Apple Music. And it was just like, oh, God, Tim, quit trying to make Apple Music happen. It's not fetch. It's not going to happen. I'm so sick of every single keynote every year ending, like after we see all of this amazing, awesome stuff, it's like, okay, we're going to end on our most important announcement and it's Apple Music. It's just like,
at least it wasn't carpool karaoke.
Guess what's Thursday?
It's a big anniversary.
Line of our sales.
It is a very big day. Thursday, June 29th, 2007. Actually, it wasn't a Thursday.
What happened,
then.
What happened?
We got our iPhone. We waited in line for hours and hours and hours and hours. We'd heard about the iPhone in January at Macworld Expo. We'd stood in front of the plexiglass case with the guards on either side, looking at it. But it was June 29th, 10 years ago. I remember getting in line here in Petaluma at the AT&T store. And it was actually not too bad. It was about a three-hour wait. What's cool, in the Apple lines back then, in fact, that one especially, if you were in line waiting for an iPhone, that you were a cool person. I mean, I met two guys from Google who had been up all night making, I think it was Google Reader or Gmail work on the new iPhone. And it was so cool. We all had our little, seats, our little ballpark chairs. And I waited in line and I was praying because I knew... Yeah, it wasn't an Apple store. I was praying that AT&T had enough, but I was like 16th in line. And yes, I came out with this. God, it looks small and thick at the same time.
So small.
So thick.
It's beautiful, though. I mean, it's just iconic at this point.
Oh, yeah. It was skeuomorphic.
And I was talking on the phone on my Trio, because that's what I had before with my iPhone.
I'm waiting in line. I'm going to get this new thing called an iPhone. And then remember that picture of Scott Bourne? We should have gotten Scott on the show today. He's been very nostalgic.
Forrestal or
Bourne. He's been very nostalgic in the last few weeks on Facebook, posting, pictures of him getting his new iPhone and, how he had the most popular at one time iPhone podcast in the world. And, it's so cute.
Did you see when Scott Forrestal said he never heard the word skeuomorphic? For him, it was photo illustrative and metaphorical.
Oh, yeah. You did, by the way. Yeah. Thank you. You did a great summary of that video at the Computer History Museum. John Markoff interviewing all these great people. I'm at Scott's page, see if he has that picture of him. He
His iPhone vest.
His iPhone vest, yeah. Wow, there it is.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I was hosting the most popular iPhone podcast in the world. Everyone was telling me I was crazy. They said the iPhone was a fad and would never take off. Scott was a believer. He knew, and he was so excited. I want to find that picture of him coming out of the store holding his iPhone up high. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh.
Tell me your story, Renee. You were in Canada, so you couldn't buy it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. I was stuck on a Treo 680 and a Treo Pro or something, just looking at the rest of the world. We're looking at the U.S. with abject jealousy.
I brought one of these for Amber MacArthur. This was probably a few months later when somebody had cracked it.
I got mine, yeah.
You could use it in Canada on Rogers or Telstra. That's Australia.
And it was $200 for 100 megabytes of data in Canada back then.
Yeah. I brought it up to her. She never used it. I found out later. she liked her BlackBerry. She wasn't going to use it.
I think BlackBerries were the last holdout because there was a lot of reasons that people used their BlackBerry and
also Canadian.
We still see them a couple times. You see them in some government areas.
I traded in that was my last smartphone before the iPhone was the Pearl, the BlackBerry with the Pearl.
Ooh, yeah.
What was your story, Alex? How did you get your first iPhone? I remember sitting in WWDC with you and Scott.
We were excited.
Today we're announcing three new products. We already went through that in January, but you know, an internet browser, yeah. An internet device, a music player,
a widescreen iPod,
and a widescreen iPod. Well, and a phone,
and a revolutionary phone, a breakthrough Scott internet communicator.
I was hanging on a widescreen iPod. My old phone wasn't working. I was like, I am not buying a new phone because Apple's releasing a phone. They're going to release a phone, and so I'm not going to buy a new phone.
Nobody believed it.
Oh, yeah. I had the angriest I ever got with AT&T got me into such a state that I had to literally hang up the phone after 2 weeks of trying to solve this problem with them and thinking that I really feel the need to cancel and AT&T. But this was like 8 months before the announcement of the iPhone. And I said, the best information I have right now is that AT&T either has already signed a contract to be the exclusive carrier of the Apple phone, or they are very close to it. Andy, are you willing to cut off your nose to that extent so you're going to have to sign up with AT&T again sometime next year to get the phone? Or are you going to eat mud on this issue, pay them the $75 that you are absolutely not required to pay them for, and extend your contract for a year, which you are not required to do? I'll have to eat spit. But I want to let them know that it's because I know that they're getting the iPhone. That's the only reason why I'm putting up with this garbage.
Andy,
oh boy, was it hard to do.
Alex Lindsay, who was on? So this is Mac Break Weekly number 46, June 29th, 2007. We called the name of the show was iDay. It was Merlin, I know, was on it.
Yeah.
Alex was on it. Netcasts. You weren't on it yet, Andy, right?
From people you trust.
I guess not.
Oh no, I was on that show.
Were you? Well, yeah, it says so, but that's because Break Weekly,
episode 46. Okay, sorry, maybe not.
Yeah, ignore this. 2007.
iDay.
Let me skip ahead.
Alex Lindsay is here from Pixelboard. He has an iPhone. Scott Bourne is here from AppleFoneShow.com. He has an iPhone. Merlin Mann is here from 43folders.com and The Merlin Mann Show. He does not have a phone.
No, but he did a great segment about the iPhone.
Omni
got him one later, didn't he?
Representing the holdout.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah, not necessarily curmudgeon, just the holdout. And I think there are quite a few holdouts. I think a lot of people, in fact, it was my advice to anybody who isn't a fanatic, a lot of people did hold out. Wait for Generation 2. Is that what you're waiting for?
Generation 2. Exactly.
Well, this one actually may have been not bad because this does not do 3G, right?
Yeah. Remember that it didn't do cut and paste. It didn't have apps. Right.
It didn't have an app store.
It had a keyboard. It had the first all glass fake keyboard that if you'd used it, you were shocked and delighted at how easy it was to use. If you had not used it, you're going to be like, I'm spending $450 for a phone that doesn't have a keyboard.
okay.
Well, also,
it was hard for the
longest time, I couldn't type my name on an iPhone.
It didn't have BrickBreaker.
I kept having to tell people the secret is to don't think, just type. Yeah, don't think, just
the
type.
The screens were too small, and it just never, LaPorte just never came out right.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I just, it was very hard.
The person who invented autocorrect is the same person who created Internet Explorer, Dean Hachimovich from Microsoft.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I have to say that launch day was a little bit heartbreaking for me because whenever people try to understand exactly how excited people were about the iPhone, I tell them about how, look, I had a briefing right after the keynote in January where it was introduced, and I got to like hold one of what must have been, I now know, were like only like two or three functioning wow. iPhones and use it unrestricted, and it was like, what news from Gallery? You actually touched the hem of Jesus? What hand was it? Can I touch? What hand did you hold the iPhone as? Can I touch that hand as well? And I'm like, oh, the scrolling was smooth. It was like the waves of a calm, tranquil ocean lapping toward the shore.
By the way,
I got so many meals off of that. That's how excited people were.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get stories of what it was like to use an iPhone was solid gold currency back then.
I tell you, I'll never get enough of the 10th anniversary iPhone. And now, of course, we have it.
Yeah,
the iPhone 10. And you know, here we are, what, a month in? It's the greatest, isn't it?
It's the Apple said it was the best product they ever made, and I think they were truthful.
Love it. I love it. It keeps getting better.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But yeah, you can watch Jimi Hendrix let sight fire to his guitar time and time and time again. I can watch Steve Jobs introduce the iPhone about as many times.
Yeah. And I think Steve would be very happy with what's happened to that ecosystem over the 10 years and this 10th anniversary.
Hard to picture him happier than he was in this video.
I'll tell you one thing he would not be happy about, at least in my opinion, Planet of the Apps.
Oh. What was that? I forgot it already, Leo. Oh.
By the way, we should say, before we look at our review of Planet of the Apps, the one of the first original, it might have been the first original programming.
Which they launched at WWDC, and we all were like,
A $1 billion Apple's going to spend. But big news that just came in last week, Apple's doing a deal with the creator of the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Yeah, Ronald Moore. And it's amazing because they're doing What If the Space Race Had Never Ended, which just sounds all shades of awesome, especially with that sort of credibility behind it.
Kind of the Man in the High Castle history, revisionist history.
But way cooler.
The Russian starship, the American starship.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, he did such a good job with Galactica. And one of the things I loved about the modern Galactica was, and I don't remember this in that crap TV show, but was that the reason Galactica survived the attack of the Cylons, this isn't a spoiler, it's the first episode, is because it was antiquated.
Yep, it was hardline.
It was all hard.
Wi-Fi nonsense.
The phones had wires coming out. I just love that.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It was like Steve Gibson was the admiral.
I have to commend Apple. I think that they've learned from the Planet of the Apps fail. Let's watch our review. Has everybody watched now the new Apple original Apple Music programming?
I know how that
Planet of the Apps.
We're gonna make app development sexy. I mean, I guarantee
it's beautifully produced, but it's just not a. Imagine, like, I wish there was a better show in all that production.
It's so crazy. It's the idea. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
You have to be a member of Apple Music, right?
I'm just saying that they lost me the moment I realized that, oh my God, this is really happening. They have to give a 30-second pitch while actually riding an escalator.
Yeah, that's a little
weird.
And
they have to finish the pitch by the time they get to the bottom.
It's like, an elevator would be claustrophobic, Andy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I mean,
they Sherlock that guy.
Well, that's the really sad thing.
Exactly. Yeah. That was hysterically funny.
Yeah. Apparently, the guy who was showing off an AR app had put his heart and soul into the whole thing, and then for the
whole episode, like they're going to show now that my mentor has gotten on board, she's going to explain to me that, well, maybe we should just use the AR technology and license to other people, and people will sell it to catalogs, we'll sell it to, and so yeah, because no one can duplicate this. It's so hard to do AR, and I'm like, oh dear, oh honey.
So it's Jessica Alba, Gwyneth Paltrow, Gary Vaynerchuk, and Will.i.am are the judges.
Yeah. And they don't make any point of like why any of these people are qualified. I mean, I'm not saying they're not qualified. I'm saying that they don't At least in Shark Tank, they start by saying this person started with nothing and now they have their own real estate empire. This person was a cleaning person and she decided to start selling things on QVC. It's like, okay, so they understand something about the business that they're trying to build for these people. It's like, I designed a really freaky looking car that's based on a DeLorean.
Well, Alba has a very successful
Honest
cosmetic line for Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop.
But they don't explain what do they understand about software development and app
nothing,
marketing.
Nothing, right? Makes really. Here's the escalator that you have to ride.
Yeah, exactly. That's like...
And Gwyneth Paltrow has Iron Man armor. So.
But it was what was crazy is that the production value is 3 or 4 times as good as Shark Tank, which it's based on over, you know, and it was, I mean, I will say it was incredibly well executed, but literally by a third of the way in, I literally had to shut it off because it made me so angry watching it. Like, I just couldn't get
it's
past.
Not, the production value is not as good. It's really, really awful. It doesn't understand that someone walks in, they give a pitch. You don't need an elevator. You don't need a special light up floor that says who's interested and who's not. It really is going to be about these four people talking to this would-be entrepreneur about their product or their service and why they should, how the deal should be structured. This is the least interesting articulation of this idea possible. It's a perfect bingo. They could not have made this less interesting.
Right. No, and what I'm saying is the production value from my perspective is the
he's talking about the cameras, the graphics.
Okay. I think what
you're saying, Andy, is the design of the show is a failure.
Well, so, and also you can make a fascinating movie about how hard it is to, as an independent developer, to bring something to market. What is that documentary on, two documentaries on indie game development? I think it's called The Indie Movie or The Indie Planet, something like that. And it's fascinating watching these people inside their homes, but working with the focus of the team making the iPhone to try to create these amazing games. And that's where the interest is. And they're not even really showing the difficulty of building an app and finding an audience. It really is about the fake meeting they're going to have with the investors that they're going to be lined up later on saying, we decide that if you're going to pivot – you see, they use the word pivot to expand our audience and then market profile. Like, they could not have figured out a less interesting way to have a show about people who build apps.
Actually, the truth is, I thought that when I first heard about it, I thought this is not good. This kind of trivializes what's involved in app development and popularizes it in a way that's going to not. The good news is nobody's going to watch it. It's not going to be a mass appeal show. So let's talk about the iPhone 8 because I think if this analyst and probably everybody else who's highly bullish on Apple is expecting a very exciting new release. One of the rumors coming from not just Ming-Chi Kuo, who, of course, has great sources in the supply chain. But now Mark Gurman is saying the same thing. It may be that the high-end OLED bezel-less iPhone won't have Touch ID?
That's a sound of shock.
That sounds like half of a story. That sounds like someone knows that the sensor that they were expecting to see is not there. But which is not to say that Apple has not put Touch ID someplace else or they have not replaced it with something that they think is just as good, but I can't imagine what that could be. So
the rumor is that they have tried putting the fingerprint reader in other places and not been happy with the results. However, what Apple will do, and actually this sounds very Apple-y, is put in 3D sensing for facial recognition. We know that these cameras will have more capabilities. And iris scanning, and that they're of the opinion this is more secure than a fingerprint. It would have to be.
That's a very Samsung-y sort of way to approach authentication. It kind of ignores the fact that Touch ID is something that you can activate while you're just basically moving your phone into position. If they can do real 3D face sensing, it'll be a breakthrough
for such a device, if they can do iris scanning in such a way that it's not, oh, what time is my flight? Align, target, widen eyes, look, hold. Well, the- okay, my phone is my plane is on time. That will also be unprecedented in this space. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
So the thing,
I mean, I think that more people will use the 3D facial stuff for selfies and their Snapchat stuff than they will. I mean, if you think about what it will do to selfies, I think it's going to be more impactful to people buying the phone is they'll suddenly have a 3D of the phone. And if we thought the tracking was good before, just imagine how good it's going to be when we've got a 3D version of your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think nobody questions. Go ahead, Renee. Poor Renee has not been able to.
No worries. The way I look at it, at least, is that Apple has finished this. Like, as far as hardware is done, this phone is finished. They're not lingering at the, you know, trying parts in like Lego.
It's too late now.
Try this.
Yeah.
So this phone is done. The only question, we are 3 to 6 months behind Apple. Like, they literally live in the future because they're working on the next 2 or 3 iPhones. So we're just trying to figure out, based on the information we have, which one of those options they chose. Now, their goal was to get the most infinity of infinity displays onto this phone, like as much glass and as little bezel as possible. And that meant changing the way Touch ID worked because it just wouldn't work with a screen like that. And they've tried technology that works under the phone and maybe or maybe not that worked. And they tried putting it on the back and maybe or maybe they didn't like that. But Touch ID is just a feature. It's not a thing unto itself. It doesn't have to be there. It was one way to solve making authentication more convenient because it's not really security. It's more of a username than a password. And if they feel like they can do what they said is a better, they can get more points of identification off of 3D scanning than they can get off a fingerprint, their job is evangelism. The same way people were dubious about Touch ID in the beginning, they'll be dubious about face scanning in the beginning. But they have to solve several problems to make this work. This is not an easy technology either. Samsung famously makes you choose between iris scanning and face scanning at the beginning, and one works in low light and one works in bright light, and one can be fooled by photos and the other one can't be fooled by photos. And that's a tough problem to solve. But Apple is uniquely positioned as a company that has a lot of resources and has full control of everything along the stack to sort of bring that sort of technology to market the same way they did with Touch ID when the previous sort of generation of fingerprint scanners weren't really ideal either. So if they did in fact go with facial scanning because Touch ID wasn't workable, it's just because they believe that it's just as good, if not better, a solution. And the biggest question to me is, like, do you get banks and credit unions to go along with it without ever seeing it work in the real world or being tested in the real world, saying, okay, yeah, we're fine with Apple Pay anyway. We trust you guys to do this. Or do we have to wait, you know, until it's been on the market for several months before they get back on board?
And Andy and I both know that the Touch ID on the back works, or fingerprint reading on the back works quite well on Google's phones, but that doesn't mean Apple would necessarily like it. It's not that it wouldn't work, but as you said, This could be better. Yeah, and that would be the thing. Yeah. So right now, the face recognition we've seen, and Microsoft has it with Windows Hello in some of their systems and other people using Windows, and Samsung has it in their Galaxy S8. The ones we've seen are slower.
Yes.
And you have to position the phone properly.
I believe they're 2D. I'm not sure if they do 3D.
They don't use
bone.
The same technology. Yeah. That's right.
They use a combination of regular cameras on infrared to basically trying to fool static photos.
Although we know that the Samsung Galaxy S8 has been spoofed, both of the iris and the face scanning.
The Apple one is supposed to do points of identification the way a fingerprint does, and then also do it in milliseconds, which is way faster than I think a lot of them.
So that would be the two issues, of course. It has to be at least as secure, preferably more secure than fingerprint, because Apple Pay relies on it. And it has to be as convenient and as fast or faster, which means you shouldn't have to – with the Galaxy S8, you have to position the phone. In fact, they even put little eyes.
Right. So supposedly doesn't. This one, you could do it on a table, apparently.
It just knows it's me, and it, you know, I don't have to do anything. It just knows. And that would be better than fingerprint because I wouldn't have to do anything. It would just know. Right.
Well, and I also think that there's an opportunity. I mean, if they included fingerprint or iris or a backup, almost a two-part authentication with these biometrics, you could theoretically not necessarily be forced to do it this way, but have the option of saying, I want to know that my watch is on, that, you know, I'm in vicinity, you're going to look at my face. And I mean, and there are some people that would really prefer to have all of those things added to it to make it, you know, very, very secure.
Right.
And as you get to a point where you really feel like it's really working, like right now, I still have time, a handful of times when I need to actually still use my keypad rather than my fingerprint. When you feel like it's rock solid, you could theoretically either make a much longer keypad entry or get rid of it.
So here's Mark Gurman's quote. So Ming-Chi Kuo, you'd expect to know something because he has good supply chain sources. And as you pointed out, Renee, the phone's done. Are they making it yet? Probably, right?
I think they're for order. Yeah, they're going to start getting component orders in.
Yeah. So they're tooling up. The factories are tooling up. Prototypes exist. So it wouldn't
be
surprising.
But you've got to program against that hardware. Like, you can't just keep moving hard. And again, I might be totally wrong. There might be people laughing at me at Apple right now. But I believe you can't you can't just keep changing the hardware and expect the software team to catch up.
Yeah.
And ship a product.
So here's Gurman's quote. He says they're testing face recognition. The company's also testing eye scanning to augment the system. The sensor's speed and accuracy are focal points of the feature. It can scan a user's face and unlock the iPhone within a few hundred milliseconds, the person said. Gurman has really good sources, so, you know, consider that. It's designed to work even if the device is lying flat on a table rather than just close up to the face. We got to explain to Mark the difference between laying and lying, but that's okay. Lying flat on the table.
Bloomberg editors.
Yeah, Bloomberg at least, yeah. No, they don't have – nobody has copy editors anymore. The feature is still being tested and may not appear with the new device. That's an important sentence. A number of people sent me that or tweeted me that when I first reported this story. They said the feature is still being tested and may not appear with a new device. However, the intent is for it to replace the Touch ID fingerprint scanner. Apple, of course, refuses. Or declines.
It would have to be there, though. I mean, like, you can do something like enabling a feature like portrait mode after you ship it, but you can't go in and retroactively put the sensor in the case.
Yeah, yeah. The hardware. This is hardware stuff as well as software. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if it's fast. And maybe this would only appear on the high-end OLED iPhone, and the other ones could continue to have Touch ID.
Also, with a given the shortened time frame, are they going to take the chance that everybody's going to get them on the same day at the same time? Or are they going to have to deal with somebody got theirs a day before someone and then someone else is saying, hey, I'm just wondering if mine's in the mail.
Oh, no, you've got to email them. You're right. Yeah. They did release it. Thank goodness they put it out. I'm sure your travel agent's happy, Renee. They put it out a little bit earlier than they usually do, a week and a half early instead of a week early.
Yeah, and I always think that South Bay is going to make things easier, and South Bay never makes things easier.
No. How about I don't know why we're stuck. Are we stuck? The TriCaster's stuck on Andy. Andy,
I mean, if you had to choose lip sync
everything we say, just lip sync it, will you?
If you had a choice of being stuck on somebody, it would be Andy too.
He certainly knows
the best choice.
He knows how to use that extra screen time. One question we got yesterday in iOS today. Is when will iOS 11 come out? Will it come out that day?
The Gold Master, if Apple follows the previous patterns, the Gold Master for all four OSs will be released that day, and then developers will have 8 days to work on it, and then the Tuesday or Wednesday before the hardware launches, that'll all be pushed out.
So you get it before the new hardware. And then
I think iPhone 3G was the last one that did it the same day, and all the servers crashed. So now they do it like two or three days early. So it would be the 20th or 21st.
I'm not laughing at you, Renee. I'm laughing at Andy.
No,
if you're listening on audio, it just sounds like I'm insane. But Andy's really got the lip sync.
Andy has a Canadian beaver puppet. No, he's not a beaver. He's a groundhog, right? We figured out the tail issue last time. Yeah,
he doesn't have a paddle.
No. Although maybe he can switch it.
Do you want to reboot the TriCaster or something? Or okay, Andy, you could put the rodent down.
Yeah. Thank you, Ernie. You're welcome. I appreciate the camera time. Hello to all my new fans. Check out my Instagram. Support my work on Patreon. I've got series of videos about things that are almost relevant, but not quite. So basically, I'm a YouTube superstar. Bye.
Pictures coming up of the Steve Jobs Theater. This is from, it's kind of interesting, a Spanish language Mac magazine had these pictures apparently discovered in Google Maps. Somebody's been uploading them to Google Maps.
That's hilarious.
So we're getting images. And Neil Seibert tweeted, based on the drawings, that there is a demo area, right?
And if it's the top floor, yeah, you'll have to walk through it. But maybe it'll be all covered in black when you go in. Oh, so they'll be assembling the products when we're downstairs.
You think the demo area will be in the lobby, the upstairs lobby?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
It is a gallery space.
So this is the only part you see above ground. That's the round, world's largest carbon fiber roof. And this is glass all around. So, I mean, there's no hiding what's inside. I mean, if somebody sends a drone over, they're going to see. So, yeah, cover it with... Actually, that'd be exciting, wouldn't it? For the press arriving, they'll go there. They'll get their badges here. They'll have their traditional cruller and a cup of coffee, and then descend the escalators down.
And send the quarterbacks in on the blitz.
See, notice this here. Let me see if I can get this any bigger. This says exhibit space right here, underneath. Oh, yeah, right? Underneath.
So, looks like G.I. Joe's secret headquarters.
It does. Temporary space storage. Yeah. You'll walk. This is really cool. You're going to walk in. The auditorium doors are here. This is the stage area is just a slice here. This, look at how much backstage and loading dock area there is. Mm-hmm. The loading dock must have a big elevator because it's underground. Everything's underground except for the lobby. So the loading dock has an elevator, obviously. The backstage is as big as the theater. The backstage is massive. And, of course, because that's where the executives are. That's where they're staging everything.
They have a secret entrance in the back that goes right from the...
That doesn't... And I don't know where Neil got these, by the way. Do you know? No. I don't know where he got these drawings.
Maybe it's the city plans?
Oh, yeah. They would have to, wouldn't they, for permitting. And then, let's see. So, this is the theater here. They've got stadium seating in the back. This says... Here it says mech area underneath. So,
where they keep the mecha?
The mech. If you don't like it, the mech are under here. Just remember.
Ed 209, right? It didn't go Ed 209 bad.
This is kind of, this is really evil genius material here. This is the underground layer.
Well, that was the big thing. It's like, are they going to get us all in there and then just flood it? Say we're tired of you people and then just flood the whole thing.
Andy, I think you and I lucked out on this one. Here's a cross-section from an aerial cross-section. Gives you a better idea. This is the stage area. All of this is backstage.
Yeah, but realize that they are building a theater. It's not a place they built specifically to give product demos.
Oh.
Although, again...
Well, what else would they have here? Plays?
Well, remember...
Operas?
They could. Remember that this isn't something that... Again, this isn't rental space. They're not going to be there for 5 years. They're going to be there for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. This is the one space you can get to without having to pass through Apple Security. And there are a lot of companies in the area, actually everywhere, where they did need a big presentation space, but they can also do things like rent it out for functions, or if there's a function that they're doing where they just they want to host like an academy screening, or there is just some sort of a speaker that they really like and they really, really endorse, they can have it in. This is the ultimate case of renovating your building and thinking that all I want to do with the kitchen is getting new appliances, but then you're thinking, well, look, I'm not going to be able to renovate the house for another 10 or 20 years. This is probably the last time I'm going to do this. Maybe I should pay the extra $15,000 to have a solarium attached to the kitchen and then a conversation area attached to that. When I see things like that in the backstage area, I'm thinking that this looks typical for a real theater where if you want to do live presentations, you need to have a wide backstage that can handle pretty much anything. And as I've been saying for the past year or two since we've been talking about this new thing, that this is also a theater that was designed specifically to get to host this sort of event particularly well. So I've absolutely no doubt that it was designed with the idea that there is a demo area that can be not just blocked off, but pretty much invisible to people who are coming in at the start of the event, or if they want to do something in the atrium area, a easy ability to quickly do a load in that area over the course of an hour. So it's like when you this is a tuxedo that was built for a magician. There are going to be all kinds of hidden pouches and double linings that wouldn't be in anything else, but are exactly for the sort of act that Apple wants to pull off. It's going to be fun. If I were attending, I would be
just as interested to document this thing looks like it's a wall, but it's probably not a wall. And, oh, I just saw somebody who was standing by this area and there wasn't a door there. And now they're not there anymore. This must be the place where people can quickly slip out, take a phone call, then come back in again.
Here's this is a great tweet thread, by the way. Neil Seibert from Above Avalon has a lot of information here. Meeting room. This says exhibit space, but when you look at the cross section, you see it says exhibit space down here. So I'm thinking the escalators come down and there's a large exhibit space that is not visible to the public here. He also says some other things, quotes the San Jose Mercury News in an interview in the San Jose Mercury News, that the theater costs $14,000 a seat, according to somebody, Borden. That there's also 1,000 seats, it says clearly on the plans here, compared to 1,600 at Bill Graham for iPhone events, but much bigger than Herba Buena Center, 760, and Apple Town Hall, 300.
And that's the cool thing, too, is like they used Apple Town Hall for a lot of things. It wasn't just for press meetings. It was for everyday company meetings.
Yeah, I'm sure this is a company.
I think they did some of Apple University was there, and they did a lot of meetups. And some of the stuff they used to do in the center court of Infinite Loop, like when they had bigger meetings, and they could at least stage quasi-bigger meetings, like when they have disclosure meetings or they have meetings to show off new app, like things internally, projects that are done internally. And the really cool thing about all this, too, is that previously, to Andy's point, they would spend like $1 million to make a platform that rose up and turned around to show off the new iPhone and then have to throw it away. Or they would spend millions of dollars to bring air conditioning into Bill Graham and then have to basically scuttle all that money. Where here they can purpose build all of those displays and all of those mechanics exactly what they wanted and then keep them.
It'll save them money, I'm sure. I mean, this is what Apple's always wanted to do, I'm sure. Actually, I hear you guys are going to, maybe not me, but some people will get back to the Steve Jobs Theater. Apple's announced its investor meeting for this year will be held there.
I haven't
buy
been
one
in a long time.
You don't have to share. Buy one share. This is how I'm getting in.
And one Alex.
Right? Because if I have a share of Apple stock, I can get in.
Can you?
I think anybody who's a shareholder can get in.
Well, there's you got seats.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to be able to eat like $168 with a catering. You should try,
$174 or $54 as we record this. It could be $200 by the time the show airs. Anyway, moving right along. And I hope you enjoyed Andy the Ventriloquist. Somebody said that was his favorite moment of all time on Mac Break Weekly. The iPhone X notch. This was right after the iPhone X came out. And the only person who touched it was you, Renee. And what we thought of the iPhone X notch.
I'm glad that you had a week, because I assume that by now, after physical therapy and emotional therapy, your eyes and your psyche have healed from the experience of having to look at an iPhone screen with a black notch at the top. I hope I haven't triggered you, because I know that this is a really emotionally devastating thing for so many people, that there is a notch at the top of the screen. Now, we're in a place of peace and love. Nothing will happen here that you do not want to happen. So you're completely in control. But if you can possibly walk us through the harrowing experience of using an iPhone that has a black notch at the top of the screen, we love
it. My experience is not a normal one, because you're so excited when there's a brand new product that just like that excitement level lets you tolerate a lot of things that in the day-to-day average use you may not. So I saw them. I could not unsee it. I call it the horns. I like that term because Craig Federighi is really good at flashing those. Some people call it the forehead and the ears, whatever floats your boat. I can't unsee it. I did notice it, especially when I turned it landscape. You can shrink down things. Like if you fill the screen with a movie, like I filmed it with Wonder Woman. And at first I'm like, holy hell, this is the world's first real HDR device, HDR from color management all the way to screen. This is blowing my eyeballs out. But then I'm like, what's this thing on the left? So you can't not see it. When it's in portrait mode, it does sort of fade away. But when it's in landscape and you see it sort of encroaching on apps and the apps have to be extra padded to go on the side, then you absolutely do notice it. Will I notice it a week after using it? I think so. I think that's the sort of thing that I'm just – like there's different kinds of people. Some people could care less. I think I'm the kind of person that it will always bother me. I would love to be proven wrong by that. But I just think, Andy, I'm not going to get over it. I'll put up with it, but I won't get over it.
Over Macho Grande? Well, never. I'm never over Macho Grande. But doesn't like when watching video, doesn't it like black out the when you go full screen? Does doesn't it like accommodate it somehow? Like
full
blackout
screen, you see the notch. Background? Full screen, it goes around the notch when you fill up the display, like when you tap on it, you make everything big, so it fills up the display. Then the notch or the horns are really apparent. When you shrink it back down, not so much. Like it sort of goes end to end the way you'd expect.
Yeah, I saw some developers were posting on Twitter. After Apple posted user interface guidelines for developers on how to embrace the notch, so to speak, but it came up with the mock-ups of how I had a hard time, not having seen the iPhone X in person yet, I had a hard time thinking that was going to be that big a deal. Maybe part of it is that I am a veteran of the Moto 360 watch, you know, that has the infamous flat tire at the bottom. But that had that little archway at the bottom for the same reason why the notches on the iPhone, because both the watch and the phone, they wanted to have no bezel whatsoever. And the cost of no bezel is you still have to put a sensor somewhere that's not being covered up by the screen. And I found that it would have been better to not have it there, but I kind of ignored it after about the first half a day or something. But
did it
bother
you if you had to turn it sideways half the time? Like if it was at the bottom half the time and sideways half the time?
I mean, it's like, and with some of these mock-ups, it just seemed like, well, what if Apple, between now and November, when they ship this thing, they just added a system preference that says just make the status bar black all the time, in which case, partly because this is an OLED screen, it will just simply look like your same black status bar, only now you don't have something in the middle of it. You have things to the left and the right of it. I'd be more concerned if it were something that really affected like the day-to-day use of it. And I have a hard time seeing the notch as something that can't be adjusted with a software update later on, or something that I won't kind of get used to. So I mean,
I'm pretty sure they internally they've had this for a long time, and they've tried everything. Yeah. They've hidden the notch. They've embraced the notch. They've done variants of the notch. They've done sometimes notch, sometimes no notch. And again, I think that they just made a decision. And I don't know if it was a marketing decision. Marco Armon had a really good article yesterday saying that it allows Apple to have an iconic shape again because the home button is gone. And now you when they make that sort of icon or that glyph showing the iPhone, it's unmistakable. It doesn't look like an Android phone. It doesn't look like a generic phone. It looks like you tell immediately, oh, horns, it's an iPhone. And I don't know if marketing is the right place to make that decision.
Yeah, I don't know. Attaching horns to the iPhone is necessarily a great marketing decision. That's all I'm saying. You know,
also the Essential phone also has a notch, so it does look like another Android phone.
Yeah. But again, like they, anytime you see a design on Twitter or anywhere else, Apple's engineers have done 20 variations of that and decided whether it's because of other issues or because of personal taste that they didn't want to go with that. Some people have said maybe that it would affect burn-in, but like Samsung has shown, you can, shake the interface slightly, like wiggle it so that the pixels change and you don't burn them in. So there's always workarounds for all these things. I think ultimately it's just that they decided they wanted to embrace the horns.
Little tidbit in Matthew Panzerino's TechCrunch review of the iPhone X. He says when he went to Cupertino last week to pick up the iPhone X, he got to interview Phil Schiller, Senior Vice President of Hardware Engineering Dan Riccio, Craig Federighi, and VP of User Interface Design Alan Dai. And Dan Riccio said something interesting. I heard some rumor that we couldn't get Touch ID to work through the glass, so we had to remove that. When we hit early line of sight on getting Face ID to be as good as it was, we knew if we could be successful, we could enable the product that we wanted to go off and do. And if that's true, it could be something that we could burn bridges and be all in with. That's assuming it was a better solution, and that's what we did. So we spent no time looking at fingerprints on the back or through the glass or on the side, because if we did those things, which would be a last-minute change, they would be a distraction relative to enabling the more important thing we were trying to achieve, which was Face ID done in a high-quality way. In other words, as soon as we knew Face ID could do what we wanted it to do, we stopped even thinking about fingerprint.
When Cortez reached the New World, he had his men set fire to his ships.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Very well motivated.
Well, I guess they set fire to Touch ID.
We've worked together quite a while.
That's good. I like it, Andy.
Now, some people are having trouble with the watch. As far as the way the LTE works and the Wi-Fi, do we think that that is something that's widespread across all of them, or is it something that is specific to a certain number of them in certain situations?
So here's the problem.
with this. People have said that this is an LTE bug.
Right.
And it's not an LTE bug. It connects to the LTE network just fine. The problem is with Wi-Fi. Now, what the watch will do when you have an iPhone 8, it will first, the watch will connect to your iPhone. If your iPhone is not around, it will look for an authorized network, a Wi-Fi network that it can connect to and do voice calls over IP. That's the next thing. After, if it can't connect to a known Wi-Fi network, it will then connect to a cellular network. So those are the three steps that it makes. Where it's running into a problem is that on your iPhone, if you've gone to Starbucks or McDonald's or one of these places and connected to their Wi-Fi network and come up with that interstitial page where it says, do you agree and accept the terms? And you have to click a button on your phone, then you can surf the web. On your watch, you don't get that page. So your watch is getting stuck on that interstitial page where you don't actually have access to the internet.
Right.
But it won't move on. So that's where the problem is. Is it a bad problem? Yeah, Apple should have known that and they should have fixed it. Now, I never had that issue when I was reviewing and testing my watch because I don't join those networks. So right. I didn't have Starbucks in my phone or my watch. So it never tried to join that free Wi-Fi network because it's so insecure. I never joined the McDonald's network or any of the other ones. The only networks that I had in my watch were networks that I knew and that were authenticated. So my watch worked fine. So people were coming up with this problem on when the reviews posted, and I thought, I never saw that. I don't know what these people are talking about. And people were asking me because I posted my review and said, yeah, it worked great. And they said, well, what about this problem? And then when it finally came out, I said, okay, well, that's why, because I don't join those networks.
Well, and I have to admit that I think this is a problem for many operating systems, and but also a problem on the iOS and macOS, is this idea I'm going to jump onto a Wi-Fi. I feel like it's a jump onto a Wi-Fi, and if I can't get to the internet in, you know, literally 30 seconds or a minute, I'm just going to get off of it. Like, I'm going to turn that thing off again, because it is a, you know, a constant problem for me is that I do use some of the insecure networks like the United Lounge or United Wi-Fi on the plane, or, you know, all of these things. And what happens is my devices jump right on. They're like, hello. And they get on and then they hang on there, and I don't have any internet, you know? And so then I have to turn off Wi-Fi and everything else. Like just, you know, until I want to use it. So I think that is one of the things that I think I wish Apple was smarter about, is that I'm going to get on. If I can't ping something quickly, I'm going to get off that Wi-Fi network because it's got something that's stopping me from getting. Does that seem like it makes sense, or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Apple Watch has to know from now on that, okay, this page, this network requires an interstitial page. Skip it and go to LTE. Once they figure out how to do that,
right,
then it's going to be fine.
Yep. And you were going to say, Tanya?
Well, I was just going to say, I believe Apple will be able to fix this on their end, and I'm sure they're working on it. But something that I think people should just think about before they get on the Starbucks network or whatever it is if you can get your bandwidth situation under control, just tether from your iPhone. That way you're going over the cellular network, and it is going to be a lot more secure for you.
Jersey fudge. So this is part of the Paradise Papers that came out this weekend. This was a kind of a follow-up to a previous massive leak of information of financial records, and primarily coming from a company called Appleby, which is a law firm in the Canary Islands, which helps big companies and high wealth individuals use, I will point this out right up front, completely legally use tax havens to stash their money. And of course, Apple very famously started a subsidiary in Ireland where the corporate tax used to be very, very low, transferred a bunch of IP, of intellectual property assets there, took a lot of the money they made and paid the Irish subsidiary for use of that property and was able to offshore billions of dollars. Well, remember, the EU censured Ireland and asked them for hundreds of millions of dollars because it was being used.
Billions from Apple.
Billions. Not from Apple, though, ironically, from Ireland. So
EU told Ireland, you have to charge Apple more.
Yeah, and Ireland did change its rules. But the island of Jersey apparently has a corporate tax rate of zero. And so according to the Paradise Papers, Apple, Google as well, Apple's the biggest, but many other companies, and the Queen of England, and the finance advisor to Justin Trudeau, and a great many high-worth individuals, including our Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, have been using these, again, legal tax dodges to stash money. I think Apple has $282 billion in Jersey, but Apple denies it. Right?
They put up a news post late last night, right, where they tried to explain their side of the story.
So nobody's ever said Apple's doing something illegal. And they're doing what you would expect, what shareholders anyway would expect, which is
I think that
paying as little tax as they can legally.
And I think all of us do that. Like, I have an accountant.
But you can't do the double Dutch with the Irish sandwich.
I don't have enough money.
You don't have enough money to do that.
But let me tell you, Leo, you know what would happen if I had enough money? I would use it.
Well,
you know, like,
you can't blame Apple for doing this, but you can blame politicians. By the way, here's a map from Wikipedia where you see the red countries. These countries have politicians who are exposed in the Paradise Papers, who are using these tax dodges. Now you know why it's legal in so many countries. Because, and in fact, a new tax law that's being proposed at Congress right now makes these loopholes, one would hope would make them illegal, gives you more loopholes, more ways to do this.
The only argument I've seen really against this is the moral one, where it says that, you know, Apple takes a moral stance on many, many issues, including accessibility and civil rights and civil liberties, and they should have a moral obligation to pay as much tax as they possibly can.
Well, that's absurd. Like, yeah, I'm just sorry, yeah, it's just absurd.
It's absurd. You know, and even Tim Cook has said that the laws need to be reformed. Nevertheless, I mean, so Facebook does it, Uber does it, Nike does it, Walmart does it, Allianz does it, Siemens does it, McDonald's does it, Yahoo does it, Allergan, the makers of Botox, do it. You know, billions of dollars. And now what's happened, though, is that puts a tax burden on you and me. We're not rich enough to do this. So we pay more tax. I pay more. More taxes than Apple does by far.
No, you don't.
And it's still worth
it. Dollar-wise percentage.
I mean, you know, they are 7% of Ireland's economy.
That's
it's
Apple's justification. They say, well, we pay more taxes than anybody in the world.
An average of 21%.
But they make more money than anybody in the world.
Well, no, and I also think America is unique in that they want you to pay taxes for money you are somewhere outside America, whether you're an individual or a company. And not all countries do that.
I understand that. Yet Apple is transferring intellectual property assets out of the United States to Ireland and now to Jersey to reduce their tax liability. I agree. Well, what are you going to say to Apple? You've got to pay more even though you don't have to?
And Amazon's looking at moving into a new city. This happens in the United States too, by the way. It's not, you know, like states provide companies with tax breaks. I mean, if you want to talk about the film industry, you know, you get a 25% tax break to film in Louisiana or in New Mexico or, you know, and that's money that it's like a tax credit that comes back to you. I mean, the competition over taxes is basically how countries and states and cities market themselves to corporations.
Well, to that point, Ireland, in 1 year, its gross domestic product went up 26% when Apple transferred everything over there. So, yes. But now Jersey gets nothing because they're not charging any tax. Jersey just gets some bankers rich, I guess.
They get their name in the press, Leo.
Yeah, so no one knew about them before that. Now everybody knows about it.
Yeah, Apple's being sued for $14.5 billion in taxes. But I have to say, by the way, Bono also does this. The president of Liberia does it.
Essentially, that everybody who wants to have some control over how they spend their money, whether it's Bono wanting to give more money away,
right,
they don't want to give it to the government. They want to give it to what they think is important.
Queen of England does it.
And not have it, you know, be, you know, squandered by
Jean Chrétien,
whatever they disagree
with. Your former prime minister does it.
So shoeing against Strangler.
What we need to do, frankly, is we need to call Congress and say, you know, you got to eliminate these loopholes.
That's not going
to
happen.
It's hard because
I think we need to get realistic.
You know why it's not going to happen? Because these people pay Congress a lot of money to make sure that they don't pay as much tax.
And it's not just the Congress; it's the parliaments in other countries. They're all benefit from this fight, like materially. So it's very hard to get them to move off.
Dozen members of the Trump cabinet are in the documents.
Yeah,
Robert Mercer and Sheldon Adelson are in the doc. Basically, any high value individual is a fool if they're paying taxes at this point.
You pay people just to make that go away. And most of them, probably half of them, don't even know what's happening. Like, they just, you know, they have an accounting firm that, you know, they have $100 million and they hand it off to a manager, and the manager makes sure that they pay the minimum amount of taxes they
Madonna
can do
legally. Madonna does it. Paul Allen does it. Wesley Clark does it.
It's pretty much
I'm
anybody.
Feeling like an idiot for paying all these taxes. I pay almost half my income in taxes.
So do I.
I feel like an idiot.
But again, if I somehow sold my company for $100 million, I would hand it off to a managing firm, and they would do exactly the same thing. And I wouldn't know about it or think about it, or it wouldn't bother me. You know, it would just go, you know, I would hand it to them, and then they give me a proper return. And that's how that stuff happens.
I mean, according to the Boston Consulting Group, the amount of money involved here is about $10 trillion. Apple's just a, you know, fraction of that.
A drop in the billion bucket.
Yeah. But I do feel like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's offensive, but it's not Apple's fault. I understand that.
There's so many. I guess that there's so many places that happens that it's like that one's an easy one to see. But you look at, like, okay, high frequency trading. That is the leech that sits on top of Wall Street. Just sucks money out for no value at all. I mean, you know, and we know, you know, people just don't understand it well enough to argue about it. So we can see this one, but I don't think that it's, you know, it's a small number.
But now Alex is looking at it now.
It's the first time I've touched it.
Yeah. The screen is amazing. Spectacular. And by the way,
it feels like you spent a lot of money on it. That's all I'm saying.
You did.
Yeah, you did. You did. And evidently, it turns out there's a lot of people that are willing to spend a lot of money on a phone.
Yeah, the upward price elasticity is amazing.
Yeah. There was something, we talked about this on Sunday on Twit. There's something about that $1,000 barrier. It's not that it is that. I mean, it's a few hundred dollars more expensive than your previous phone. And that's a few hundred bucks amortized over a couple of years. It's not the end of the world, but something about psychologically about going through that $1,000 barrier.
I asked people in line, and most of them were like, "Cost how much? I don't know. I'm getting it for $20 or $30 a month," and that's the only number they saw.
That's really what Apple's done. That's, I think, smart. Yeah. And at $20-$30 a month is that all?
I don't know what the US price conversion is.
I think it's more than that.
Yeah. I think the base is 30.
For how many years?
Well, normally it's a 2-year.
Well, you give it back, though, so you don't own it. That's the whole thing. So you're basically a leasing model.
I think I did the math, and I think it ends up being like $1,300 instead of $1,200, something like that, you know? It's a little more expensive.
The Apple one should be zero rated, so it should be like leasing a car for 0% interest.
Oh. The only negative on that is if you've damaged it, you're screwed.
Well, you get Apple Care Plus automatically with it, so you get two incidents.
You know, I'm going to probably have to do – I don't know why I didn't do that. That actually sounds like a smart way to do it. So you're not paying extra. You're just spreading it out.
Yeah.
And you get Apple Care Plus.
I'm not good with payments, so I just buy everything.
I do too.
Like, I'm just like, oh, I'll miss a payment.
Well, I'll be honest. Most of the time with a phone, I use it for a few months, then the next phone comes.
Exactly.
And it's Android.
Totally. Totally.
I have a feeling.
But to your point, Leo, like,
DisplayMate
and the display on this one, I can't get over it.
So DisplayMate said it's practically textbook in terms of color accuracy, the best screen they've ever looked at. You know, and I trust these guys. Sonera does a very.
I was going to get a color accurate monitor, but then I decided just to get an iPhone.
One of the things they said is that they have managed to calibrate each device accurately.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing individual sub-pixel level calibration across every unit.
And
you need for color management, but a lot of places just aren't set up to do it.
Well, I think we talked about this, that the problem with the Pixel 2 XL is that it's batch color calibrated. And so there'll be some significant variation in different units. But in this, DisplayMate said, close to textbook perfect calibration and performance. Superbly accurate, high performance, gorgeous display. Now Apple's quick to say it's still an OLED. It's an OLED.
Yeah.
Burn-in is always going to be an issue. We suggest, Apple says, you turn the screen off time to its lowest setting, 30 seconds. We highly recommend you use automatic screen dimming. Oh, Alex is looking at a movie.
I'm watching Deadpool.
It's UHD, right?
It's HDR. It's HDR Dolby Vision and HDR 10.
It's funny. I watched Deadpool on my new Apple 4K Apple TV.
How did it look?
Because it gets you out to get automatically upgraded.
Looks good. You have an HDR TV.
The Netflix stuff is amazing because the Marvel Netflix stuff is all muddy, but you watch it in HDR and suddenly there's color everywhere.
It's amazing. Yeah. And the blacks are very nice. I watched Stranger Things. There's a scene, no spoiler at all, but there is a scene in Stranger Things where two people are brightly lit in a black room, a dark room. And in HDR, that black is black. There's no artifacting. There's no banding. Yeah. It is it is lights out, and because of it, they pop out of the screen. Right. So it's 3D without any 3D.
Well, you know, I was talking to someone, well, I was actually talking to Colleen about compression.
Colleen Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
she's the expert now.
The world expert.
Our chief engineer here, and then she went to Google, and then now she's at Facebook, and she's the world expert in everything having to do with video, I think, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
She's where I go for school. You know, and
that's saying a lot. Yeah. I mean, you're my expert, so
No. Like I go over, I spend a lot of time with, and I can only handle a couple hours at a time before I get a headache, you know, just trying to absorb the information.
Is this off YouTube? Where are you watching Deadpool?
That's off of iTunes. Of your,
it's off my iTunes. This is the upgraded 4K HDR.
That's right.
And I really think that, it's great.
But she was saying, you know, one of the things that her opinion is if you're going to do 4K or HDR, you want to just throw a lot of bandwidth at people because the if they have a 4K TV, 4K HDR TV, they probably have a good internet connection. You know, there's like this, like, you know, why do you buy that if you don't have that? Right.
And the best thing about the iPhone is you don't have to worry about the HDMI, because right now HDMI cables are causing the most headaches for everybody just to get 444 from the source to the television. It's like playing roulette whether your cable will work or not, but it just works on an iPhone because there's no cable involved.
And a lot of it's the run, by the way. We've been doing 4K for a long time with monitors, and it turns out how long that run is a big deal.
Interesting.
You know, you have to, we find
and
that
some of the high ones aren't shielded, Alex, which is causing all sorts of problems for people.
Yeah. Yeah. The, we find that over 6 feet, that's when it really becomes an issue, of whether it's going to work or not. But yeah, so, I mean, like my home connection now, I mean, tests it like, except for yesterday when Comcast went down.
That was weird. What?
Yeah.
Let me show you, this is probably a good shot as any. For high dynamic range, because there's a brightly lit sky in the background. I don't actually see any detail in the sky, but I do see detail in the white tent behind it. And, of course, there's plenty of detail in the black jacket, the T-shirt. This is a kind of a good example of high dynamic range in video.
It'd be interesting to get it. Wait. I think I can download. Where are you?
It's also depending on the studio, because they get to choose which version of 4K they give you and whether it is true HDR, true 4K, or upsampled.
Yeah.
So there is some variance in the content. Like, I think a lot of this stuff shot in 4K.
It's funny that you picked Deadpool, because that's what I picked at random to take a look at the 4K UHD HDR. It's a great movie, and I happen to own it. But even
Apple
just
demoing La La Land
even just
and
the
Woman.
Screen and the icons, the text, and of course anybody at home seeing this is not seeing it, because we stream 720p if you're watching the video, and if you're listening to the audio, you're really not seeing it. But just in the hand, it really does look superb.
And the amazing thing is, if you put your old iPhone next to it, it looks the same. Like, the icons don't look different colors.
No. And that actually is amazing, because typically, in fact, I compared it on another show to a Note 8 screen. I compared the red in the Authy. Red is always challenging for any video, right? Red in the Authy icon to the Note 8. And the Note 8 had a pink tinge to it. Mm-hmm. It was a little poppier and brighter. This is it's a very real natural red. It's perfect as far as I can tell. And it's just as, you know, throughout, very well, and you don't have to trust our limited eyeballs.
Where were you in Deadpool? Yeah.
And there's a couple of differences here. One of them is that this is going to be if you're not been an iPhone user, you've probably been one for like 5 or 6 years. This is going to be your first OLED screen. And so you're going to get a dramatic improvement over what you've seen before. If you are going from an Android phone like I am, it wasn't quite so dramatic for me. I thought it was very, very nice. It didn't blow me away, but I could certainly appreciate how good it was. But just in case you're being scared off by, I don't have HDR content, I don't care about HDR. On the train ride to New York City yesterday, I was actually watching an episode of Columbo that I ripped from DVD over the weekend. And even that was just a really satisfying amount of detail and color, even for a DVD quality rip of a TV show that was filmed in 1974. So yeah, you're going to be really, really happy with it.
Alex is trying to pull up the same frame on his iPhone 6S just to compare it. That's an LCD screen. Apple's always done good screens, and their LCDs are nothing to sneeze at either. OLED can be challenging because the temptation with OLED is to make it brighter and poppier. And
it's an immature technology, and it can be the absolute worst panel on earth if you don't do it very carefully.
I have the 4K.
But you can also it's not necessarily a bad thing to make the colors pop.
Significant differences in the same scene. It actually looks a little brighter on the 6S, but in terms of detail. What's interesting is it's because it's brighter, you're seeing more detail on the 6S above it. We should turn your screen down or mine up.
Well, HDR also kind of can save you energy because you do tend to overdrive the screen because you want to see details that are hidden in shadow, whereas the HDR screen will show you that detail even if you've got the backlight or the lighting of the brightness of the screen turned down. So I think even people with
that's
the
gonna be
iPhone
my challenge
6 or
is that,
iPhone 7.
Is that I tend to turn mine up to 11. Most of the
time. Turn it to 11.
You can go to 11 and
what's interesting is even though I turned up the brightness, the blacks are still inky and there's not a lot of detail in it. So I don't know. I prefer the bottom one, which is the iPhone 10. But
yeah, I think it looks more number one is it looks less blue.
Yeah, it looks more natural.
And it looks more natural.
And at home, you're not seeing the difference at all. By the way, just look at the guy's head. The flesh tone in the bald guy's head is so much better.
Yeah, it's a lot
and
bluer.
Also, HDR10 and Dolby Vision are different. Like Dolby Vision does very careful frame by frame HDR, where I think HDR10 does a line through the entire video to
calibrate it. And is this Dolby Vision or HDR10?
I'm not sure.
I know that the Apple TV does both, but I don't know what the iPhone does.
Okay. Yeah, it does both.
Okay. So it depends on who, what Marvel.
The studios get to pick everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I'm just getting some breaking news. I'm going to go to the Twitter right now. And Lemmy Orhan Ergin, who has just tweeted something kind of scary. This is a security flaw that affects High Sierra, the latest version of Mac OS. Be assured you need the bad guy would need physical access. And, of course, when somebody has physical access to your machine, lots of things, bad things can happen. But this one's a bad one. I'm sure Apple will push out a fix very quickly. If you go to users and group in the system preferences, you know, it's locked, right? Click the lock to make changes. Use the word root as username. No password. First time might not work. Second or third time it will. You're going to get... Yeah.
And that's not the worst of it. He's just using that as an example. You can actually log in to a locked machine, according to him, using the same technique.
So if you come up to a machine that's locked, enter the word root, and then apparently the root password is blank. And root, by the way, just so you know, is a super user in Unix operating systems. It means you could do... things. And I'll give you a little. Here's a little tip: if you do get in as root, go to the terminal and type rm.
God, am I glad to have switched to Windows?
All right. Well,
maybe I'm just going to keep this Windows machine plugged in for things other than podcasts.
rm-rf star. Just hit return, and the entire hard drive will be erased.
Yeah.
And there you go. That feels good.
I mean, famously, the original iOS, it was root Alpine for everybody.
Yeah. This is, first of all, I'll say it again. I'm glad Lemmy found this. I'm glad he tweeted it, I guess. Might have been nice to tell Apple before he tweeted it.
Close Apple first, yeah.
That's kind of the rule in the security field. But Apple will certainly push out a fix to this fairly quickly. And remember, if somebody has physical access to your system, you're screwed in many ways, although this is a particularly bad one.
Listen, this is about as bad as we were all having great fun talking about the calculator bug.
Yeah, no, this is kind of bad.
Really super
I'm sure
bad.
Steve Gibson will have some fun with this later in this show.
I didn't try it yet
because I'm podcasting, but there's so many people who said that they got it working.
Yeah.
I think we've tried it here.
Patrick Delahanty tried it. It worked on his system. Yeah. So.
We're going to see that secret unannounced feature of the new Apple campus where they can flood the middle of it for like mock naval battles like the old Coliseum. And we're going to see a bunch of product managers and engineers in gladiator gear as part of their punishment for letting this happen. Saying, now, granted, you will not die, but you will be escorted out of the building if you lose this mock sea battle. This is bad. This is very, very bad.
Not good, because, of course, if you work in an office...
Apple should feel very bad about this.
Yes.
Apple should have... there should be an email. there should be, like, some sort of announcement saying that we acknowledge this is pretty horrible. We have put measures into place to ensure that the problem of this magnitude is unlikely to ever happen again.
This is just bad.
But the good news is if you forget your password, there you go. Just log in as root with no password. And
Do you remember there was an iCloud keychain bug a little while ago too, where it would mislabel the files and you could get mislabel the fields and it would give you the wrong, it would just show the password. This seems like there's something went really goofy around High Sierra security at some point.
Wow. High Sierra has been, I have to say, iOS 11 and High Sierra both have had a non-trivial number of bugs and problems. More than usual?
No, I think iOS 11, it's mostly, again, current pain. But High Sierra, when you add in the window manager and some of the security stuff, and when you factor in that it was supposed to be a stability release, you know, that was the big marketing thing, that they were going to correct a lot of the problems. I think that's when it becomes problematic. Mm. iOS 11, I think there's bugs every version of iOS. I'm never happy with them. But High Sierra seems to have quite a bit more issues than Sierra did.
By the way, after you log in, maybe the first thing you want to do is launch Keychain Access. Again, it works on Keychain Access, and you can see in the clear all the passwords stored in the Apple Keychain. You might want to write those down for future use.
But hey, have you seen how thin our new MacBook is? Look how thin that is.
You might want to take with you when you leave the office. Take the power supply. I don't know. What could you take with you? Take it all. Don't leave your computer at the office.
It turns out that the place where the puck is going to be has no security. So before you sharpen those skates, this is really bad. I'm sorry. This is really super bad.
It is
we
as bad as
we should be making fun of Apple for this because this is super bad. Yeah.
Well, the only way it would be worse is if you could log in over the internet. Now, okay, here's a workaround. Somebody suggested, and I think this might work. Before you leave work, go into the terminal on your Macintosh, log in as root, which is the command is sudo sudo space su. You are going to log in as a super user. You will obviously use a blank password to do so. And then, create a password, use the word passwd, and it will ask you for a new password. You can use blank as the old password and create a new password. Let's see if that works. Patrick, will you try that?
Patrick Dillingham. I wonder if it's a terminal bug, though, or it's just in the GUI, because otherwise you'd still need the root password.
Let's see. Let's see if that
could
works.
Could you also do a firmware password? I don't know if that would help with this.
Yes. Well, that might be another solution if you have to go home from work today, is to turn on a firmware password. Here's a GIF of it working. In German. Oh, there he goes. Nice. Let's start over. So the first time it rejects the blank password, which makes me think maybe it isn't a blank password. So he types root as the Benutzer name and Benutzer Name, and then blank, and that works. And now he's got full admin access to the... That's terrible. That is... You're right, Andy. That's as bad as it can get. I think in some ways that was our greatest moment when we found out in the show about the High Sierra flaw. And found the workaround before the show was over. That's
boot blank.
Yep. It was like being there for the moon landing. You're just reacting to world events as they strike you.
Exactly like that. Andy, I hope you have a... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, now you have to wonder if that was something about moving all that protection into the new T2 chip. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Never know. That's interesting.
By the way, I did order, as you might know if you watched MacBreak Weekly last week, I did order the iMac Pro. It won't be in here in time for our next show, which is, of course, next Tuesday, January 2nd. But I'll get it a couple of days after that. I'll probably review it on the new screensavers, and we'll have it for January 9th. We can talk a little bit about it. I'll have it set up here so we can...
Andy or I will be in it.
Yes. You should be... We should make your avatar be in the iMac Pro. We could do that, right? Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
I need to comb my hair first, but yeah.
We're upping the ante. Happy New Year, guys. Happy New Year, Andy. I hope you have a wonderful 2018.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all the viewers. Thanks to all the listeners. You guys and gals are wonderful.
It's just really great doing this show with you guys. I really enjoy it. And Andy, you've been, of all the people, Alex is the first, right? You started Mac Break, the video. And it wasn't very long before. I remember, Andy, I was at a Macworld Expo, and I saw the hat and sun and sideburns going up the escalator, and I chased you down. And yep. I said, first of all, I love you, and second of all, let's do Mac Break Weekly together. You've been here for it's been at least 10 years, I think. You've been doing
it's been a long, long time. I got my fingernails already. I got my name basically carved into the lintel in a place you can't find it.
That's a wooden plaque.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Joe Knoll. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. I know you're going to have a wonderful 2018 with your family back in PA.
Yep.
Have a great time.
End of the year. And
what do you do? Do you fireworks for New Year's Eve?
I have to admit that I don't really do anything for New Year's.
Go to bed. You're now getting to my age.
I know half the time I'm not even awake on New Year's Eve. I don't, you know, we used to do it. My friends and I, when I was living in Denver, we had a great little tradition that I just haven't found other people to play with, where we would basically write like a whole bunch of things that we did well, that we did badly, the mistakes that we made. Like we like five or six things. It wasn't like we wrote like a long thing, but the big things for us. And we had a little fire and we just throw them in. Like that's the end of the year. Like it was just like, you know, we would talk about the end of the year, like kind of look at it and then you throw, burn it and then you move on. And that was the only thing that I ever found particularly fun. Because it was over a lot of whiskey, too. I mean,
I know we've done, when we did, you know, my favorite memory of New Year, of course, is doing the 24 hours of New Year.
Oh, yeah.
The marathon.
When Leo choked me out.
Yeah. Yeah, you choked me. Yeah, so that, right, you were showing me, what is it, Brazilian
Jiu-Jitsu. Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. And you got the best of me.
You told me when I tapped the floor to let go.
Yeah.
But I was so overcome by the moment, I didn't.
Leo's like, UFC champion, y'all.
It's perfect. I kind of am sad. I have mixed feelings about that. Those 24 hours practically. I still have sciatica in one leg because of it.
You lost all your hair, Leo.
Yeah, I lost. I got shaved. I still have a tattoo on my butt because of it. But yeah. But that was a lot of fun. I think those were my favorite New Year. But I'm too old now. I got to go to bed. I can't. What do you do, Renee? Are you going to do anything?
I usually go to George's brother. He owns a special effects and lighting company, and he used to do fireworks, but then I got hit by, almost hit. My iPhone leapt in front of me to catch the firework before it hit me. So he thought that's not a good idea anymore, but we still go there and party, and it's like a block party. It's a lot of fun.
I just had a thought, John. Do we have the 24-hour New Year's? Could we run it? Yes. Let's do that. Sure. It'll be, what was the year, like 2014? It was 3 years ago. It's a rerun, but it's still fun. All right. If Lisa says yes, we'll rerun. What time would we have to start it? Like 2 p.m? Oh, you're doing best ofs that day? Oh. Well, that's New Year's Day.
Well, you can run on the Twit 2 channel.
Yes. El Ocho. We'll figure it out. We have a lot of great content that we're going to be running all through the week. So, including, by the way, you're watching it, this best of. Thank you so much for making 2017 great. We couldn't do it without you. We really appreciate your being here. And I promise you a great 52 episodes, give or take, in 2018. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll see you next week with a brand new show, January 2nd. But now I have to say it because I end every show this way. Time to get back to partying. Because break time is over.